Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right, all right, all right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio here, everybody. Yeah, we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Triple Play Thursday, that means get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. And talk and text right here on 720 WGN. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich follows the show with the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. After we break here in a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by our good friend Rod Pyle. He is an author, a speaker, journalist, editor-in-chief at Ad Astra Magazine for the National Space Society, and he's a space expert. And we got a lot of outer space and space news and stories to talk about. It's always fun to talk with Rod. And if you guys have any questions or about space-related stories and news, you can call us or text us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Rod's going to join us in just a few minutes. And out of the talk with Rod, Rod's worked on TV shows and movies as a consultant and stuff, and we're going to jump into the sci-fi genre. We're going to talk about the most accurate and least accurate sci-fi movies of all time, and then some of the most underrated sci-fi movies of all time, and talk about sci-fi movies in general and which ones you guys love. But I like the angle of the most accurate and least accurate sci-fi movies, and that's one of the things that Rod has talked about in the past, and in fact has written a book about science fiction movies and what works and what doesn't. So we'll jump into that. We're also going to talk about things that we are all doing wrong. If we have time, there's an article that gathered together Roger Ebert's most hated movies. They just had Ebert Fest down in Champaign, when he hated a movie, he hated it and would write really scathingly and often very amusingly about those bad movies. So we'll jump into that. As always, our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and Triple Play Thursday requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. The best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us right now, facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcast. Every single second of every single show gets podcast, and it will be available. You can go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, subscribe, you will get your podcast sent to you automatically to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. Lots of people listen via podcast, and we appreciate that. So there you go. That's what's happening this morning. We will keep an eye on everything that's going on in the world, as usual, and keep you entertained till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 for any space questions or space news questions, and also get your Triple Play Thursday requests in. Let me talk to my producer, Tom. Hi, Tom. How are you, man?
I'm good, Nick. How are you doing?
All right. All right. Triple Play Thursday. We always get some interesting ones in there.
Yeah, we're going to be starting off with a few good sets here.
Okay, cool.
Good sets. Very
excited.
They're
already coming in.
Yeah.
As soon as we announce it, people just start throwing in their requests, which is cool. We appreciate the enthusiasm and participation. So Tom's going to be producing all morning, and we've got in the newsroom our good buddy Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Good morning, sir. Doing very well.
Good, good, good. It's Thursday already.
I can't believe it.
It seemed like the week went by pretty fast, right?
It zoomed by for me anyway. Yeah. Jeannie just told me she's off tomorrow, says this is her Friday tomorrow.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a few out there that have the day off on Friday. So
for Good Friday.
Good Friday, yeah.
Exactly. So, Yeah. Well, it was a short week for Tom because he was sick for the first couple of days.
Yeah.
Hey, I was putting in work in a different way.
I bet you were.
Cool.
I bet you were.
What do you mean, the abs?
Yeah. I swear I could have a six pack right now if I were sick just another couple days.
Yeah. There you go. Well, he's back. He's good. And we're gonna have a good time this morning. We're talking about sci-fi movies. Tom, you a fan of sci-fi movies?
Huge fan of sci-fi.
Yeah.
Love sci-fi.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of things here, a couple of articles here. One are the most accurate and least accurate, those are always fun to
analyze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the most underrated ones, maybe they snuck under the radar and people really didn't see them. So we'll tell you all about some underrated sci-fi. And then we'll just talk about sci-fi movies in general. Which ones do you guys love and go back to all the time? We'll get into that a little bit later because we're going to talk about the world of space with Rod Pyle coming up in just a few minutes. All right, Vic, how about them Cubs?
Hey.
How about that?
Oh, I just had to pass up tickets.
You had to what?
No. That's... Darn it. I just had to pass up tickets to a Saturday game.
Oh.
I told Jeannie, how bad of a father would I be? Because she's going to go. She's out of town this weekend. But I have my kids.
Oh.
I said, how bad of a father would I be if I left them home? Because the oldest is very old enough to leave it home with the other two. She said, oh, you'd be a horrible father. I knew it.
Oh, man.
So I had to pass it up.
Oh, that's too bad. No, they're hot right now, man. They played good baseball. I want to temper my excitement a little bit because they were playing the Marlins.
I know. Yep.
You know.
It is true.
But the last two performances by the starters have been great, and you did a good job.
Yep.
But these last two performances, two shutouts.
Well, you have that when you play a AAA team.
Yeah. Hamels pitched really well. He seven innings of shutout baseball. It was pretty impressive. He only got into one kind of jam, and he got himself out of it.
Yep. I'm liking the way Hamels looking.
I don't know what's going on with Javi Baez. He's just from another planet, I think.
Yeah.
I really do think he's from another planet. Maybe we'll ask Rod, our space specialist, if Javi's from a different world.
He's extremely dialed in now.
He really is, man. He's so much fun to watch, too, because he's nuts.
What about Rizzo, though?
Yeah, well...
He's in a slump.
He's in a slump a little bit. KB could be playing a little bit better too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did get a hit tonight, right?
He did. Yeah. But it was guys like Contreras are coming in, and these guys who are batting seven and the eight spot are doing great stuff.
Yeah,
they're really picking up the slack for the guys who for like Brian and Rizzo. Yeah, it was fun to watch them. I mean, it really was. We'll see what they do because they're playing Arizona. Arizona, right? Is the next?
Yeah, right. They're off today, but Friday. Yep.
Friday, Arizona at Wrigley, and then they got a day off, and then it's the Dodgers at Wrigley, and those games with the Dodgers are always pretty heated.
They are
because they tend to beat us in the playoffs. So
I don't know if it's random or if it's related, but I noticed four LA Dodgers caps walking around yesterday. So that must be unrelated, right?
Yeah, it's got to be
too early.
Yeah, it's got to be. I wouldn't. I mean, unless they want to take a whole extended vacation because they don't play the Dodgers till Tuesday. So I don't know.
Unless they're making a week out of it, but
yeah.
I've never seen four in one day.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
Yeah, I was hoping the wind would pick up a little more.
Do you ever get that where you get annoyed when you see a certain fan base is being represented somewhere? Every time I see Dodger hats, I get really angry.
You mean here in Chicago?
Oh yeah,
it's St. Louis, man.
Cards used to get me bad, but now Dodgers.
Yeah,
for some reason, really.
I understand that. I can understand that. I can totally understand that. It's like when I see Red Wings jerseys in town or St. Louis Blues jerseys in town. It's like, no. Leave.
Switch into football. I notice a lot of Broncos fans represent well when they come to Chicago. And I blame United Airlines because they've got about 1,000 nonstop flights to Denver every day.
And Denver, of course, has the weirdest airport in the country.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the portal to hell with a talking gargoyle.
Right. Secret underground spaceship being built or something.
Exactly. Well, no. And then how about the Sox getting a little bench clearing brawl there?
Yeah, I missed it.
Anderson celebrated after hitting a home run a little bit too much for the liking of the Royals, and the pitcher plunked him next time he was up. But they ended up losing.
What's your take on that? Do you say just run to first base, or do you say let him celebrate a little bit?
No, I would. I saw his celebration. I didn't think. I didn't think it was as cocky as obviously the Royals did. The Royals thought it was cocky enough to plunk him. I didn't think it was as, you know, I really didn't. But like, if it's really, you know, like if you're getting into somebody's face, you hit a home run, you get, especially like if you've got the lead.
Well, yeah,
you know,
sure,
if you got the lead by maybe 2-3 runs and you celebrate like a maniac and like give it to the other team after hitting a home run, you're going to get plunked, man. That's just part of the game.
I love these unwritten rules in sports.
Oh, man,
you know, I love
it. You knew it as soon as he did it. You know, I was like, he's going to get hit, man. The pitcher's going to hit him, and when he comes back, and he got booted from the game in the sixth inning. But the thing is though that they ended up losing the game. They could have had the sweep, but they didn't get it. So they play today, don't they?
Yeah, today, 12:10, first pitch.
12:10, first pitch. Okay. All right, cool. All right, we'll talk a little baseball here. And I know, Tom, you're a really big Cubs fan as well, right? Yeah. Okay, cool. So we were hoping that the Cubs keep their streak going, 3 in a row, man. They're only 1 under .500 now. They were 1-6 at one point. So it's looking pretty – it was fun to watch these guys for the past few days. So, all right, let's take a quick break. Space. That's what we're going to be talking about. Our good friend Rod Pyle, who's a speaker and author, journalist, written a ton of books about the subject of outer space. We've got a lot of news stories, and if you have questions and concerning any kind of outer space stuff or space in general or observations, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Rod will join us right after we take this break on WGN. This week on Chicago's Best, no silverware allowed at the table. Chicago's Best is grabbing a tortilla and loads of meat and toppings. It's Chicago's Best Tacos, Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV. It's gonna be a long, long time. Chuckdown brings me round again. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, man. Yeah. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. We're going to have a conversation here with Rod Pyle, and then we're going to jump into the world of sci-fi movies. We have the least and most accurate sci-fi movies, and we also have a list of really underrated sci-fi movies that you might have missed. So we'll jump into that, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. All right. He joins us usually about once a month to talk all things space-related. He's an author. He is a speaker. He is a specialist in the world of space. And his new book, my God, First on the Moon, The Apollo 11 50th Anniversary Experience, sold out on its first print run on the first day. So he must be very happy about that. Our old friend Rod Pyle is here. Hi, Rod.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm pretty happy, as you said.
Yeah, congratulations on the success of the book. That's really outstanding, man.
Yeah, it's nice. I had one book back in, I think, 2009 that within a couple of printings it sold, like, I don't know, 240,000 copies or something, which was definitely the high point. And since then, it's been substantially less. So this was great. It was really happy. I mean, you know, these things are generally successful. If they hit the 10,000 mark, they're pretty happy.
Yeah.
So I think we've done that already. So, yeah, very happy. And well, then I got one more coming out on May 7th called Heroes of the Space Age.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that one, too. All of your books are great. And by the way, this Apollo 11 book is really, as we mentioned, before, really beautiful, man. I mean, just a gorgeous coffee table book with lots of great stories and interviews, but really just a beautiful looking book.
Yeah, I think it's nice when a publisher puts in that extra work, and it's little stuff like the embossing on the cover of the title and the extra gloss on the cover and so forth. It just makes you want to pick it up and sort of cherish it because, you know, a lot of people don't get books the way they used to, I think, just because we don't get a lot of exposure to it. You see on Amazon as electronic image of the cover, but when you hold it, it's just a different thing, so I think that's really cool. And I also think it's really cool that you're going to be talking about sci-fi movies later. I'm going to have to stay up and listen because that sounds like too much fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that you've worked on some, and I was, you know, I try to, whenever we talk about it and we have articles and perhaps lists of things, I try to stay away from looking at it before the show because I want to do it cold and react to it.
Yeah.
I want to react to it, you know, but I haven't really looked at we have a list of the most accurate and least accurate sci-fi movies, and I'm sure you would have a lot to say in that department.
Well, can I just vote for the worst?
Okay, yeah.
Black hole. Oh.
Well, you know,
1979, yeah, yep. Disney, right?
Yeah, Disney's first. Here's the big distinction that movie has, and why it's sort of historical. It was the first movie that Disney released that was rated PG.
Yeah, I remember it was a big deal.
It was a huge deal.
Saw it, and of course, so at the end they go into the black hole, which looks like a big tunnel made out of tinfoil and cotton candy, and I didn't quite get the very ending. It looked like there were angels or moths or something flying around at the end of the tunnel. So I saw it in 79, and then I was doing a world trip in 1980 when I was, I guess, 22. And I was in Thailand, and I just really needed some Western exposure because Thailand was not then like it is now, you know, 30-plus years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I saw the black hole was playing in Bangkok, and I thought, that can't be as bad as I remember it. I'll go see that. It was every bit.
Yeah.
Even in Thai, it was bad.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. It is pretty bad. And I'm guessing that will be on the list. I would imagine.
I hope so. Yeah.
Well, babe, give everybody your background real quick. You know, as we do every time you're on.
Yeah, so I got interested in space race as a kid. I was actually on an NPR station today talking about this, and the host reminded me that I'd written about being alive when Mariner 4 flew past Mars, which was the first deep space probe we had that had cameras. And Mars went from being this possibly semi-verdant planet with plants and maybe some small animals and things we still didn't know, to looking an awful lot like the moon. But I was hooked because we'd seen another planet, another world. And then I grew up during the space race, so I got to see the launches of the Apollo missions and so forth, which was just a magical time.
Yeah.
And after a couple of years of trying to be an astronomer at UCLA, in which they not so subtly suggested that probably wasn't the best field for me to be studying, I went into documentaries and writing, and started doing books in about 2005, and been doing them ever since. And it's fun. And then, great. Of course, the magazine, as you kindly mentioned.
Right, Ad Astra. Tell everybody about Ad Astra.
So Ad Astra is a magazine that a group called the National Space Society has been putting out since the 80s. And it's quarterly, and we do about 70 pages per issue. This coming issue is going to be the first one in, I think, 25 years it's going to be available to the public, which is exciting for me.
Yeah.
Since we have a staff of about three, and I'm the main one of the three. But it's going to be almost 100 pages, and it's dedicated completely to Apollo 11 and the other Apollo missions. And we've got an exclusive interview with Buzz Aldrin, and we interviewed Jim Hansen, who wrote the first man, the autobiography, or the biography of Neil Armstrong, and a bunch of other cool special features and book excerpts, and even an augmented reality feature, because it is the 21st century, and if you're going to do these things, you got to have augmented reality. So you'll be able to point your tablet or your cell phone at the magazine, and the Saturn V will pop up and that kind of stuff. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, that's cool. That's really, really cool. So, and you just mentioned that it's very exciting that it's now available to the public. How big a deal is that?
It was a lot of work. You know, the NSS is an older group. It's been around for about 38 years, 37 years, I guess. And, you know, it's a large organization. It's all volunteer run. Very few of us are paid. So I am, and there's a handful of others. But, you know, change happened slowly, and it took a lot of encouragement. And understandably, you know, there's a lot of concerns anymore about piracy and getting on the right platform and how are you going to market through iTunes and that kind of stuff. But I think we've got it nailed, so we're going to do this as an experiment, and then hopefully by the end of the year be doing that on a regular basis, because we'd like to get it outside the immediate membership. There's a very large membership in the organization, all told. I think it's about 30,000, but you know, we'd like to get it in the public eye, because it's our best forward-facing tool, and the purpose of the organization is to encourage an interest in this kind of stuff, so that's why we want to turn forward.
Is there a website that people can go to check it out?
Yeah, space.nss.org, and the magazine is in one of the drop downs there, and you can see samples of it. You have to join the organization right now to see it, but as I said, hopefully you'll be able to buy individual issues and then subscribe without necessarily joining in the future. But joining is not a bad idea, because there are other benefits, and we have a big conference every year. This year it's coming up in June 6th through 9th in Washington, D.C., so you get to geek out with another 1,200 people that are interested in the same thing you are. And how often do we get to do that?
Yeah, it's true. Very, very true. Okay, Rod, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
You bet.
All right. Rod Pyle is with us. He's the best. He is an author, journalist, speaker, and an expert in the world of space. If you have any questions or comments about the world of space, he can answer them. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. 312-981-7200. The news is after this. If you believe they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago. And my guest right now is Rod Pyle, who is a speaker and author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine, and a space expert in general. He joins us usually about once a month, and if you guys have any questions or comments about the world of space or space news, 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200. All right, let's get Rod back here. Hey, Rod.
All right, how you doing?
All right, sir. So, you know, before the news, you know, I was talking about how we're going to do underrated science fiction movies and the least and most accurate science fiction movies, and you mentioned how much you love the black hole. But speaking of black hole, wow, huh? Let's talk a little bit about what happened last week.
Boy, that was a big one. So they've been teasing this announcement for a few days anyway, if not a week. And it was not unlike, I was working at Caltech a couple of years ago doing some writing for them, and we did a similar kind of tease when the first results were coming out of the LIGO Gravity Wave Observatory. And we knew but couldn't say anything, and then the news leaked, and we had to scramble and all that. But this one, I think, was managed a little better. So a bunch of radio telescope groups got together and combined their efforts, and this was, I think, 8 radio telescopes across 6 different countries, I think. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's long baseline interferometry, so it's a way you can combine the signals from these telescopes spread out across the diameter of the Earth to basically create a simulated gathering of data that's as wide as the Earth. So yeah. It gives you this, in effect, this huge dish that is powerful enough, if you had something the size of a baseball irradiating the right energy on the moon, you'd be able to image it with this system.
Wow.
So they collected data for years and years and years. And when I say collected data, they did observations of this object called M87, which is about 55 million miles away, black hole. And they collected this data, and then they would have to fly it from all these radio telescopes into the central processing station on hard drives because it was just too much to send over the web. It was too dense of data. So they collated it and worked on it for 2 years and took those radio signals that they were getting from the object and converted them into a visible image. And what we got looked kind of like a big orange smoke ring or Sauron's eye from the Hobbit movies. But you know, it's a black hole, and I honestly didn't think I'd live long enough to see that image. And it's kind of oxymoronic because you think, well, if it's a black hole, it's dark, right? But the idea is that, yes, the center of it's black. It's essentially, you know, this kind of infinite mass that's punched through space-time. So that's dark. But as the matter is being sucked in by this thing, being vacuumed up and condensing around the perimeter, it heats up, and that's why it's giving off all that radiant energy. So what a great moment that was.
Yeah, and it says that it took over 2 years to assemble and generate the image.
Yeah, it was still out of focus. I mean, geez, you know, if I'd done that in photo class, I would have gotten in serious trouble. So it was an incredible effort, and I don't know where their funding came from. I suspect some of it was from the National Science Foundation, but what a great thing to do, and Einstein's got to be rolling over in his grave because he was not fond of the idea of black holes. He thought that it was a possibility, but he didn't like the way the math worked out, I guess. So, there you go.
Well, it was really, really cool to see, you know, and they did. And it got so much coverage, too, Rod. You must have been thrilled with that.
I was. And it's something I remember reading about it in the 70s. There was a book by, I think his name was John Black. A number of them came out kind of within a few years of each other, sort of talking about the new refinements of this idea that had been kind of drifting around of black holes and neutron stars and what these things might be like. But the idea of actually seeing one of these things, I feel a bit like the whole exoplanet phenomenon or objects where they use gravitational lensing to see things, where you actually use you have an object like a dense galaxy or a star or something between you and this distant object, and you use the gravity from that body to bend the light and, in fact, make this giant lens so you can magnify something on the other side. I mean, this kind of stuff was total science fiction even 15 years ago, and now we're seeing it happen, and it's just incredible.
Yeah. And it was fun to see the coverage on it. It was also fun, you know. You mentioned the Eye of Sauron from the Lord of the Rings movies. People had a lot of fun online with that image of the black hole.
They sure did. Yeah. I mean, it could have just as well been an orange smoke ring, but I thought the Sauron ones were particularly good.
Those were good.
They're
going to
rip on that kind of stuff.
They did have that. Go ahead.
There's another thing recently that happened that is one of these kind of. It's a little smaller. But the star Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky, it's up in the northern hemisphere. You can see it on most nights at one hour or another. There was an asteroid that astronomers are tracking, and they've gotten so good at tracking these trajectories that they're able to predict for the first time in human history when the star was going to wink out for a second or two.
Oh.
And because this asteroid is going to pass between some parts of the Earth and the star. So in a band, it's like a solar eclipse almost, in a band of shadow that raced from Latin America up through the middle of the U.S. and into Canada, people, if they stood outside and were looking at that star at that moment, it went away for about a second and a half or 2 seconds, then popped back. So that's pretty cool math.
Yeah, wow. So that's very cool. But yeah, that black hole thing was everywhere, and that's amazing what it took to get that image. I mean, that's just really incredible, the effort and time.
Yeah, and the ability to just plan those things out. It's a little bit like I was at a book festival a couple of weeks ago in Tucson, and I was on a panel with Alan Stern, who's the guy who was in charge of the New Horizons mission out past Pluto. And I wasn't really quite clear on what the hell I was doing on stage with this guy. He's one of the gods, but
right.
I wasn't complaining, you know. But I was talking to him afterwards about what it takes to navigate across, you know, the better part of, 7 years, billions of miles away to pass a couple thousand miles away from Pluto, and then Ultima Thule, another billion miles out. And he just kind of smiled smugly and said, yeah, we're good at that. And it's like, yeah, okay. You know, you can afford to shrug it off, but I don't even begin to understand how they calculate those things.
Right. Well, there you go. You got the big brains in the room, Rod. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and God bless them, you know, and I feel honored just to be able to write about them, much less understand what they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, it was a wonderful moment last week that everybody around the world got to see, which is really cool.
So great news story, lousy movie. I think we've summed it up.
I think we have summed it up. It is, and it really is a lousy movie. I was in high school when that movie came out, and I remember everybody was very excited about it, and then we all went to see it, and it was like, what? What was
However,
that?
If you ever saw a movie, it was probably before your time. It was when I was a teenager, called Green Slime.
Green Slime?
About a space station. It had one of the guys that was in Andromeda Strain was in it. I forget the name of the actor. But
all right.
It was a space station that was taken over by monsters, aliens that looked like 5-foot guys in green garbage bags with tentacles. And I kid you not, the tentacles were tipped with car flares, red car flares. You couldn't miss it. Even as a 9-year-old, I'm looking at this thinking, those are car flares. This is idiotic. And, you know, they had shots outside the station with these little monsters stuck on with glue and strings.
Oh,
I mean, it
man.
Was just unbelievable. So if you ever get a chance, I'll be up there on your list of 10 worst.
Yeah, okay. Green Slime. I'll have to, you know, we have a local horror movie host who hosts horror movies here every Saturday night. His name is Sven Gulli, his real name is Rich Coase. Rich Coase, and he's celebrating 40 years doing the Sven Gulli character. Every Saturday night he shows movies,
man.
And that would be a fantastic movie for Sven to show.
So you're on a personal basis, you can call him Sven. I like that.
Well,
we used to have a couple of those out here on the West Coast, but they haven't done it for about 30 years.
Yeah, he's the last of a breed. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I mean, there aren't many there's not that much local television programming anymore, just in general.
Right.
Let alone having some guy in a weird costume, you know, hosting bad horror movies, you know? But he hosts
Well, I think mystery
Yeah, go ahead.
Mystery Science Theater kind of stepped in and took over that space,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and they're great. Those guys are great. They're very funny. Yeah. So, all right, Rod, before we take a break here, 815 area code sent in a text that said, what does your guest think of the whole To the Stars Academy movement to force UFO disclosure?
Well, you know, I'm all about disclosure. I don't know how much there is left to disclose. There was that thing, I think we talked about it. It was last year, the year before, that pilot off the West Coast.
Yeah.
Got that gun camera footage of those objects. And he said, you know, that they were there. That's all. What can I tell you? They were there. They weren't airplanes. They were moving in this weird fashion. And then I think it was shortly thereafter, there was a guy that in the Air Force, an officer general, I think, that came out and said, yeah, we've been suppressing stuff. And these stories get a fair amount of traction, and those both seemed to be credible. And I thought, well, gee, that kind of throws the whole Project Blue Book thing into a little bit of doubt now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then they kind of go away. We don't hear anything for a while. But the bottom line for me is, you know, I'm sure there are national defense concerns, and supposedly there's a plan in place on how to deal with first contact if that ever happens at the government level, although I haven't seen it. But I've read about it enough. But, you know, if we could verify one of these things, can you imagine NASA's budget the next day?
Yeah.
It would just skyrocket. It's like, okay, go fetch you guys. Go find it. Go prove it. So I think it's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, and then they would immediately hire Jodie Foster. That would be the first thing that they would have to do.
So. Well, and a little implausible towards the end to some people, but I thought that was a killer movie.
Oh, I love Contact. I love that movie. It's one of my favorites. I think it's a great film. It's Robert
that
Zemeckis.
That first moment when she's on the beach, first scene.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I practically cried. That it is so beautiful.
It's a great movie. It's Robert Zemeckis, man. That guy is responsible for some of the best movies ever made. He really is. I actually got to meet him in December, Rod. My God, I got to interview Robert Zemeckis, and he signed a bunch of stuff for me. I got a picture with him and everything.
Oh, man.
This guy's one of my heroes, and I got to actually interview him and meet him, which was amazing.
Every time I'm on your show, there's some reason for me to be envious of your lifestyle. And now here's another one.
All right, listen, Rod, hang on, okay?
All right.
Lots more to talk about with Rod in here. We've got some space stories, and we got people who are calling in and texting. It's always fun to have Rod on. We're talking space. 312-981-7200 on 720 WGN. We'll get back to it right after this. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. At 6, it's your morning drive with the great Steve Cochran. We're going to jump into sci-fi movies, the most underrated and the least and most accurate sci-fi films. And just in general, you want to talk about sci-fi movies? Let's start rattling off the ones that you love. 312-981-7200. We'll do that a little later on. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Our guest right now is our friend Rod Pyle, author, speaker, journalist, editor-in-chief at Ad Astra Magazine, and space expert, and we're talking all things space. Let's welcome Rod back to the show. Rod, welcome back.
Thanks, sir.
All right, we do have a call here with our good friend Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Nick?
All right.
I love this topic with your guests because, you know, driving at night, you see all kinds of weird stuff in the sky, and you don't know if it's real or just a reflection, you know? But the other morning I was watching TV, and there's a program called Mysteries at the Museum. And this guy was kind of studying the Chicago fire, you know, the big Chicago fire,
sure.
Great, whatever they call it, not the soccer team. And he said, just in looking at the history of it, he went and found there was fires up along the, I guess it'd be the west side of Lake Michigan, up in Wisconsin along the lake. And one down on the bottom in Indiana, and a few over in Michigan on the same day, same night. And he, I don't know if the guy was a scientist or into astronomy or whatever, but he said he found that there was a comet that had been, you know, that had come around pretty regular that they knew of. And he said after that, they haven't seen it since. And he kind of thought maybe it hit the atmosphere and disintegrated and, you know, pieces hit like Chicago and these other towns is Mr. Pyle ever heard anything about that?
Well, that takes Mrs. O'Leary's cow off the hook then.
Right.
Well, Rod, have you ever heard that theory?
I haven't. Now, if it's a comet, those are ice primarily. So if chunks of it did come in the atmosphere, and I don't think they did because it would have been a much bigger sight than it was. Even Halley's didn't come nearly that close to Earth, and that was pretty spectacular, at least the first few times they looked at it. So as far as I know, any comet that we'd see would be chunks of ice, so they would be hot. And interestingly, meteors, even when meteors come in, which are rock, meteorites when they hit, so they're either made primarily of stone or of iron. There's two basic types. Once they get to the ground, they're actually still pretty cold because they're soaked through cold in space, and their surface heats up as they come in and light up, and they're spectacular. If you've ever seen a big one come in, they look like, this enormous white or bluish white, sometimes greenish white streak across the sky, and you think, wow, that thing's going to go start a fire. But once they hit the ground, they're actually pretty cool. So I personally doubt that, but weirder things have happened, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was just kind of weird when they were talking about Chicago Fire. Sure. Then I hear him talking, and I'm thinking, "Yep, the cow's off the hook." I had the same thought that you had.
So, all right, Rich, thanks for the
call. I like that. Thank you.
See you, Rich. Take care, buddy.
Yep.
Right. Bye. Rich is out there driving all night in a truck. Rod, he listens to us all the time. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the week that SpaceX had, and then they tell us about the Falcon Heavy landing, which was a big deal, right?
It was. I mean, this is the second one. So the first flight was characterized as his test flight, and as we all know, that's when he launched his red Tesla Roadster into space, which is out somewhere between, I think it's round, made its loop around Mars and is coming back towards Earth, around Mars's orbit. It didn't actually go around the planet. So that was spectacular, and this was the second flight. It took a little longer than a lot of us thought, but went off without a hitch. So launched perfectly, deployed his payload perfectly. These are all the tough points you want to hit. Separated the side boosters perfectly because there's three of them. There's three Falcon 9s bolted together to make this one big rocket.
Right.
And it's about two-thirds the power of the Saturn V, so this is a big deal. This is a return to be able to lift heavy things up into space, which lets us do what we want to do better, and at a heck of a price. Even in non-adjusted dollars, it's a fifth of the cost of what the Saturn V was. In adjusted dollars, way, 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 way less. So yeah, it's a cheap way to get big things up there. So it all worked fine. The two side boosters came back and did another picture-perfect landing in synchronous style at Cape Canaveral. And the center core, which was lost last time, it missed the barge and came down the ocean, and it lands out to sea because obviously it flies further than the two side boosters, so it is further downrange when it does the boost back maneuver and then comes back. So it's got to land on this barge they have out there, and it's tricky stuff because you've got this barge out there that's autonomous and doesn't have a crew.
Yeah.
Then you've got this rocket stage coming down that's autonomous. They're talking to each other with computers and a radio link, and it all happens automatically. There's no joysticking, so it came down this time, landed on the barge just fine, but sea conditions got bad as the barge was heading back into the Florida coast, and apparently the rocket toppled over in, I think it was about an 8 to 10 foot swell.
Yeah.
Sea state.
I was reading that story and I'm thinking to myself, wow, they finally get it right, that, and then the weather screws everything up.
Right. And for the smaller, for the single stage, single core Falcons, they actually have clamps that grab the feet of the rocket and hold it there. They, for some reason, have not gotten that quite together for the Falcon Heavy yet. I don't really understand what the difference is, but,
yeah.
Had that happened, it probably would have been fine. So, not sure at this point whether it's recoverable, but they think it's still hung up on the barge. It just toppled over, but it's still on the barge. If that's the case, the expensive parts of that thing are the landing legs and the engines, especially. And kind of weirdly, those grid fins, those little spatulas that come out to help guide it down, are really quite expensive. So Musk's tweet said, well, I think I can save the expensive stuff if it's still on the barge. They did manage, for the first time, as far as I know, to recover both halves of the fairing, which is that big nose cone on top that splits in two halves to let the satellites out.
Yeah.
And those came down, parachuted in the ocean. They stopped trying to catch them with that boat with the catcher's mitt they were using for a while.
Right, right, right.
They said, okay, we'll just get them out of the water and hose them off and use them again. So those things are like $6 million. So that's kind of a major deal.
And so the other thing is that there was that concerning SpaceX and other things, private companies. There's a new Air Force program that's happening that's going to involve these private companies.
It's an ongoing thing. They every few years they put out a request for proposals, and they say, okay, we want to launch this many military payloads over the next 3 years, 5 years, whatever the span of time is. So you guys bid on it, and we're going to give 60% of the business to one company and 40% to the other, and we'll give you some upfront money to help you finish developing whatever rockets you're going to use.
Yeah.
So Blue Origin bid on it. The United Launch Alliance, which is one of the old big aerospace companies combined that launch rocket, build and launch the Atlas V and so forth, bid on it. And SpaceX bid on it. And so... I don't think the awards have gone out yet, but at least some of the notifications have. So, you know, it's important to the industry because, of course, these new up-and-coming companies and then the older ones like ULA and Northrop Grumman that are trying to survive and adapt to this new environment really need that business, and they need that. I think there's $1.7 billion or $2.3 billion or something up front for each of the major contenders to finish developing and getting their hardware ready, except for SpaceX, weirdly. It wasn't offered to SpaceX, and SpaceX was a little miffed about that, I think. And in the past, a few years ago, they weren't even allowed to bid on Air Force launches. It was all the United Launch Alliance with the Atlas. And Elon finally had to sue the Air Force just to be given permission to bid, and the Air Force relented, so he dropped the lawsuit. So I don't know if something like that will happen again or not. But it's a rough and ready and wild time. And just one more small thing that's interesting. Blue Origin, which is Jeff Bezos' company, which is flying small rockets now, but it'll be flying big ones next year, we think, is not only building its own rockets, but they're actually selling their biggest rocket engine to ULA. So it's kind of co-opetition. Okay, you're our competitor, but you know what? We want to make money from both sides of the equation, so we're going to sell you engines so you can stop using those Russian ones. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, all right. Okay, cool. And Falcon Heavy's next launch is later this year. What are they going to do with that?
That is it's another Air Force launch. It's a combination of an Air Force payload and a bunch of NASA experiments and then some other small packages that are going up because this thing's big enough that it can carry a bunch of different payloads in one launch. And it will reuse the two side boosters they just used on this last one, which are a new design called Block 5. And it's the first one. It's more powerful. It's the first one that they think they'll actually be able to reuse 10 times by just basically hosing it off and fueling it up and checking everything. So that's truly, it's like the water rockets we had kids, right?
Yeah,
it goes
whooshing
up there, and it comes down and cracks your sister on her head, and you get a good laugh, and then you pump it back up and go again, and they're kind of going to be doing the same thing. So that was kind of a big win for them.
Yeah. All right, cool. Rod, hang on, okay? All right, Rod Pyle is with us. He is our space expert, author, and speaker. 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. The news is coming up right after this. Well, we have a lot of fun. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows us with the opening bell. Steve Cochran at 6 with the morning drive on this Thursday. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. We'll start that in a little bit. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. We're going to jump into the world of sci-fi movies, talk about the most and least accurate sci-fi movies, and the most underrated sci-fi movies, and then just open up the topic for you guys. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Rod Pyle joins us usually once a month. He is an author, a journalist, a speaker, editor-in-chief at Ad Astra Magazine, and he joins us to talk about space and space-related news stories and much more. Rod, welcome back.
Thanks, sir.
All right. We do have a question from a listener. This is Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi, Rod. The producer asked me to start with this question. Hopefully, I'm 59. Hopefully, everybody that's at least my age remembers Alan Shepard taking a 6-iron and 2 golf balls and hitting them, or Buzz Aldrin giving himself communion. I'm curious if there are other things that astronauts smuggled into the capsule in Mercury, Gemini, or Apollo.
Well, there is a kind of infamous moment in Gemini 5, was it? It was Gus Grissom. It was the first Gemini flight with a crew in it, and John Young was his co-pilot. And John decided that Gus ought to have better food than that junk they were sending up inside the squeeze tube, so he smuggled a corned beef sandwich inside his suit. And so once they were up in orbit, he took it out and said, "Here, Gus, enjoy your sandwich." And the next thing, the little crumbs of beef floating all over the capsule, and had a lot of trouble sort of chasing him down. So, you know, you got to watch what you take up there. And there was one other story that I put in a book I wrote in 2005 that I had some trouble tracking down, actually. It's not something they smuggled, but on Apollo 16, which was John Young and Charlie Duke on the moon's surface, the previous flight, they had noticed some heartbeat anomalies in the astronauts when they were on the lunar surface. They said, "You need to give these guys more potassium." So they gave them a bunch of oranges and said, "Eat your oranges," or it was orange juice, I guess. "Drink your orange juice when you're on the moon. Keep your heart healthy," and all that. And Young, who was kind of he can be kind of a crusty character anyway, was drinking this orange juice, and he didn't realize he was on hot mic, and he's talking to the other astronaut in the lunar module between moonwalks. And "Gold, darn it, Charlie, I got the farts again." And he goes in this big, long tear about having gas and gastric problems, and "I'm not going to ever eat me another F and orange again," and all this kind of stuff. And he dropped the F-bomb a number of times before finally Mission Control was able to break in and say, "Hey, John, you're on a hot mic. You know, sorry, can't drink that orange juice no more."
These guys
are like the test pilots. They're the best of the best, so. So that was a good moment. And then, of course, as you point out, the golf ball was just stunning. I remember seeing that as a kid on TV thinking, that's style,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
that was a great moment.
Those are great stories. Thanks thanks for the call,
Jeff. Can I say more thing about Gus Grissom?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
He's from Indiana, and so am I. I met a man that knew him. And when you referenced Gemini 5, the name of that capsule was Somali Brown. And the reason was his Liberty Bell 7 sank in the Atlantic Ocean, and he told NASA, "I'm going to name it Somali Brown." They said no. He then says, "Well, that's fine. I'll name it the Titanic," and then they go back and agree on the Somali Brown.
Yeah, that was a great story.
One quick question: did Purdue or MIT have more Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo astronauts?
Oh man, you got me. I think possibly Purdue, because I only remember a handful from MIT, Buzz Aldrin prominent among them, but I'd have to go on Wikipedia and do a count.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
That was fun.
It's really weird. You tell that corned beef story. God, that's so funny. That is so funny.
Yeah.
But you tell that corned beef story, and I can't help, and this is just me, this is the way I think, I can't help but picture Fred Ward. Going after the corned beef, because anytime I hear the name Gus Grissom, I immediately picture Fred Ward.
I know it is so hard to think of those guys and not picture the people from the right stuff.
Exactly,
it isn't my favorite space movie, but it comes. It's like John Glenn, Ed Harris.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
you can't really separate those guys. And boy,
Sam Shepard,
really,
Sam Shepard, for God's sake! I mean, all those guys.
Yeah.
Oh man,
what a film.
Yeah, I love that movie. I really do love that movie. All right.
Was fun, and I have to say my favorite scene was not the space stuff, but it's when he's riding his horse up and the X-1 is just sitting there burning off some fuel and there's nobody else around.
Yeah.
And that was such a wonderful, spooky moment, I thought.
Yeah.
Okay, I love this movie right now.
You know,
it
was really funny. One of my memories of the first time I saw The Right Stuff, and I've seen The Right Stuff multiple times, but the first time I saw it, and the movie, for people who may not have seen it, it's over 3 hours long. It's a very long movie. And there was an intermission. The first time I saw it, there was actually an intermission. And I'll never forget, I was at the Esquire Theater, downtown Chicago, beautiful, big 70-millimeter theater. That's the way to see the movie. And I made the mistake of not going to the bathroom before the movie. And so we get to the scene where they have to hold their urine. They're doing all the medical experiments on them and stuff, and I was losing my mind. I remember sitting in the theater going, why is this scene happening right now? Because this is like, I'm actually feeling what these guys are feeling right now. It's like sense around or something. It was just, that's one of my first memories. But that was very close to the intermission, so I made it okay.
Well, and as he's up there, I think that was Shepherd at the Capitol, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And he's up there, and you're seeing all these guys at Mission Control pouring their coffee and turning on the taps in the men's room and all that. And you're probably sitting there in the audience, your knees bouncing up and down. I gotta go. That's cute.
It was hilarious, man. It was great. All right, so Mike Pence made an announcement that seemed pretty exciting for people who want to get back to the moon last week. Let's tell us a little bit what the VP said.
That was a bit of a shocker. So he came out and made a speech, and this is working with the National Space Council, which is the group that consults with the executive branch to give NASA, you know, overall direction and outline goals and so forth. And they've been talking about trying to get American astronauts back to the moon, maybe 2028 for landing, but we don't really have a lander. And so it's kind of vague. And Pence came out and said, we're doing it by 2024. We want it by the end of the second Trump administration, if there is one. And that's that. And that was a bit of a shocker.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people, including myself, that were kind of sitting there with their jaws open. And I had kind of a mixed feeling of, man, this is really cool. And are you sure?
Yeah.
Because we've seen this happen. You know, Kennedy famously made an announcement in 61 and 62 at the moon speeches. And that happened, and that worked. And there's a lot of reasons for that, including having a really good enemy in the Soviet Union to push against. Then Reagan tried it with Space Station Freedom. That took a really long time to happen, and it turned into an international effort. George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush both tried to do similar things for return to the moon. And none of them really caught traction. The money wasn't there. The support wasn't there. So hopefully this time it will be. The next thing that happened, though, which really did make me feel good and give me hope, was he said, and I'm paraphrasing, and we're looking at all options in terms of how to do it, and commercial rockets are part of the deal. So if NASA can't get the SLS together on time and on price, then we use the Falcon Heavy, or we use Jeff Bezos' New Glenn rocket. They're going to be cheaper anyway. And now you can really make this thing rock and roll. What I did think was kind of weird was invoking China and especially Russia as kind of the bad guys in that discussion, because, yeah, China's very active in space, and they're both doing some military stuff in orbit that we're not terribly happy about. Of course, so are we. But, you know, Russia, once we pull out of using the Soyuz and we're taking SpaceX and ULA and Boeing rockets and capsules up to the International Space Station, Russia may kind of cease to exist as a human spaceflight power for a while, because we're paying a big part of the freight for them. So I think that was a little fuzzy for me, but the rest of it was really exciting.
Yeah, and I was surprised when I heard that was the time, that was a time frame. How do you think is NASA going to feel okay about using the you know, I mean, there's been cooperation between the private companies and SpaceX's and all that stuff in the past. So is everybody going to get along here?
Yeah, I mean, their hardware, that big hardware has always been built by aerospace companies. So Grumman built the lunar module for the Apollo program. North American Aviation, which became Rockwell, built the command module. A bunch of different companies built the Saturn V. So they always used aerospace companies to do this work. The difference now is, instead of cost plus, which means you bid the project and then you get a fee on top of whatever you spend with massive price overruns usually, because you have to bid low to get it, now it's fixed price. So, hey, SpaceX will buy your rocket, but you got to do it at this price. No ups, no extras, no surprises. And so that's a very different deal. But even when you look at NASA's internal studies on how things have worked out with SpaceX, their own auditing office says, look, these guys are doing it for anywhere from a half to a tenth of what it costs us. So let's just go with it. You know, they know what they're doing. They're putting a lot of their own money into this stuff, at least for the early part of the development, depending on the rocket. But Falcon Heavy is all their own money so far until this last launch.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the way to do business. Now you can really get things moving quickly at a price.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. What are some of the things that will be that will block that kind of timeline for this situation?
For the lunar stuff?
Yeah.
They don't have a lander. So they were working on some designs back of the Constellation program, roughly 2004 to 2010. So I don't know if they're going to pull one of those out of mothballs or go with something with one of the private companies. Jeff Bezos has been working quietly on a lunar lander. It's not human rated at this point. It's cargo, but it wouldn't be impossible to re-rate it for people, I don't think. So it's a question of how we get down to the surface, and are we going straight from Earth orbit to lunar orbit to the surface like we did with Apollo, or are we going to stop first at the Lunar Gateway, which is the program that NASA is working on before this announcement,
right,
which puts a smaller version of the space station around the moon. They are now, in the interest of time, downsizing that so that you've got a little more room than a mid-sized RV to live in instead of that bigger station. So, you know, it's kind of feeling like Apollo again, where we're racing to try and do this quickly, and that's fine, as long as it isn't another closed-end program that says, okay, we're done, and now we got no use for this hardware, because that's what happened last time, and that's how we ended up with the shuttle. So let's not do that. You know, okay. Let's make sure we keep going. Stay there.
Okay. All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
You bet.
All right, we got one more story here to talk about with Rod, and if you guys have any questions or comments space-related, talk or text 312-981-7200. One more segment here with Rod, and if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Will the Tigers roar in Detroit, or will Moncada and the Sox start the series swinging? White Sox Tigers today at noon on WGN TV Sports.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Nice choice, Tom. We're back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We're talking with Rod Pyle right now, author, journalist, speaker, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. He's written approximately 317 books, if I've got that. Did I get that number? Did I get that number right, Rod?
Boy, I wish. About 15.
Okay, there you go. And you, tell us really quickly about the one that you have coming out in May.
That's called Heroes of the Space Age, and if I had a cool reverb like you do, I'd use it, but I don't. And it's pretty much what it sounds like. It's eight different guys and a couple of women. And, you know, the hard part was trying to figure out who to profile. You know, I want to do Von Braun, but he's got that kind of spooky past, so can you really call him a hero? I do, but in the end, of the publisher said, let's say that for the sequel. And I said, okay, oh, sequel? And my ears perked up at that. But it's some of the favorite astronauts and some of the unsung heroes, like Margaret Hamilton, who's a woman who did the big chunk of the programming for the Apollo guidance computer. And basically, it was her code that saved that landing on Apollo 11 when the computer was locking up. So cool stuff like that. It comes out on May 7th, by the way.
Okay, May 7th, you can check it out. And also, you can check out Rod Pyle Books for more information. Rod Pyle Books for all the information on that. And also, how many, you know what movie, we talked about this one in the past, that I think was an eye-opener for a lot of people, was Hidden Figures. Was that a movie that you found to be, was it accurate? And it was a story, I think, that needed to be told, for sure.
It definitely was. I think it got a lot of people thinking about stuff they hadn't thought about. It was fairly accurate. The Kevin Costner character was kind of an amalgam of a few different people, but it makes sense to do that for a movie. What I found kind of fascinating, I wish they'd included Von Braun, because we're just talking about him, and it was, despite his past as, you know, the engineer of the first ballistic missile, the, you know, devastating parts of London and Antwerp and so forth, and some questionable things with the Nazi party and the SS and so forth, he made sure personally that Huntsville was the first NASA center that aggressively desegregated when the government started moving that direction. He said, yep, we're going to take the lead on this, and he pushed that through. So, you know, a puzzling personality that man had, but he truly was one of the greats.
Okay. All right. And this last story that we're going to talk about here, I just find so fascinating. And it's been talked about here on the station as well. This whole NASA study of identical twin astronauts. This is really fascinating stuff. Tell everybody about this who might not know. It's the NASA twins study.
So Mark and Scott Kelly are two identical twins that were both astronauts. So what are the odds of that? And they had both flown in the shuttle era. And Scott went up in March 2015, stayed on the station until March 2016, so almost exactly a year. And they did a lot of medical tests on him and drew blood and checked his urine and his stool and so forth and did just about everything. It's like the right stuff, right? It was just about every exam you could do. And then on the ground, his twin brother, they had the same medical protocols. They tried to keep everything as standardized, as parallel as possible for them. so that they could compare results when Scott got back and say, okay, what changed during that year he was up there? There's changes that they already knew about that all people in extended weightlessness experience. Your eyeballs get distorted, so your vision tends to get out of focus, and they wear glasses and they get back. Most of them, their eyes recover. They kind of squeeze into an ovoid shape and you're in space, and then they round up again when you get back on Earth. Most of them recover, some don't. But there are some other changes that were more puzzling. The telomeres, which are the ends of your chromosomes, lengthened, which is usually a sign that you're going to live longer. And they thought, ooh, you know, if this is something that happens in space and stays that way, this could be a very interesting finding. But alas, they shrunk back to normal when they got back on the ground. And there was some cognitive changes from extended exposure to weightlessness. A little bit of confusion, a little bit of brain fatigue, a little bit of fuzzy thinking. Again, when he came back, that overall came back to normal, and he was fine, and all his functions were restored. But you can imagine if you spend 5 months flying out to Mars, and then you got a joystick of landing because something goes wrong, you want to be at your best. So that's going to be a concern moving ahead. And this is what the space station is so good at, being able to have people up there and equipment that you're testing out. So before you go on one of these extended missions to, say, Mars, which is many months away, you know what you're getting into, because it's a lot harder than we thought.
Yeah. I was just amazed at how the body altered, you know, how the body altered itself while he was out there.
Yeah.
I mean, just really fascinating.
You get taller, and then your midsection kind of bloats out because all the liquid tends to flow in towards your upper torso and your head. And they kind of have a permanent head cold while they're up there. And they actually, one of the favored things to take up in their personal food packages, Tabasco sauce or sriracha, because it's so hard for them to taste anything because their heads fill up with fluid and it just blocks everything and your nasal cavities and so forth. So, yeah, a lot of weird things happen to the body when you're in extended zero-G. You know, one obvious solution, talking about great science fiction films, 2001 A Space Odyssey, stick a centrifuge in those guys. And whether it's an orbital station or a long-distance spacecraft for deep space travel, as long as you've got this thing spinning that gives you some sense, it doesn't have to be a full Earth gravity. It can be maybe a third or a half of that. We think that would still keep people pretty healthy. We haven't tested it yet because we haven't had one up there. And they're hard to build, and they're heavy and have to have motors and power and so forth. But eventually, I think that's going to be the thing they're going to have to do. You're just going to need some form of gravity over the long term.
Yeah, it's fascinating, fascinating study. Really, really amazing. Before we let you get out of here, 262 area code says, I want my grandkids involved in the galaxy. Would we be able to see the space station with a really good telescope? And if so, what would be a good one?
It moves too fast to look up the telescope. Binoculars are plenty. And if you know, and get on Amazon, you know, when I was a kid, binoculars are hundreds of dollars. And if they're going to be any good, now they're $40-$50 for a pretty decent pair. And you can look on NASA's website. Just Google NASA, ISS, and flyover, I think, are the three key words. And it'll tell you when the space station is going to fly over your area at night. And you can go out there. It's real obvious. It looks like a very bright star moving about double the speed of a jet airliner, I'd say. And it's very clear that it's up there, and binoculars are the way to go.
Okay. All right, great. Rod, always a pleasure, man. It's always great to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Have a good rest of your evening.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Rod Pyle, everybody. He is the author, a journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. He joins us usually about once a month to talk all things space. Always fun to have Rod on the show. Okay. We are going to segue into science fiction movies. I'm going to tell you about the least and most accurate sci-fi movies of all time. Then we're going to jump into some underrated sci-fi movies. And anytime you want to jump in with your favorite sci-fi movies, we're talking sci-fi out of that space talk with Rod. And our phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And it's nice to start off Triple Play Thursday with the Beatles. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, that's you want to get your requests in. It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. One artist, three songs for Triple Play Thursday. And who, Tom, who requested the Beatles?
The Beatles, one of the best albums ever recorded. So that was Sam, wanted to hear a little Tomorrow Never Knows.
Got it.
The rest of the cuts are also from Revolver.
Oh, so all from Revolver, which is my favorite Beatles album.
So good.
All right. Well, we were just talking with Rod, who knows everything about space, historian, and you know, almost knows all the science, and has actually worked on science fiction television shows and science fiction movies. So we are going to talk about sci-fi movies right now. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. I'm going to tell you, this is from popularmechanics.com. And we have the 10 most and least accurate science fiction movies. So if you're ever watching a sci-fi movie and you go, geez, I wonder if this is possible. I wonder if this is kind of accurate. I can give you some examples of the most accurate and then some examples of the least accurate science fiction movies. And then we're going to jump into sci-fi movies that maybe you love, if you want to get in on that. And I also have some underrated science fiction movies to tell you about, in case you haven't heard of them or seen them. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Before I jump into the most and least accurate sci-fi movies, here's Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
I just wanted to add, you recommended this, I think it was last year, on your list of great sci-fi movies that were underrated and underappreciated, and it was Colossal
is from 2 years ago. Yeah.
Okay, it's such a great movie.
It's a great
movie. It was surprising. It was very surprising.
Yeah, no one saw that. In fact, when we talk about underrated sci-fi movies, that will clearly be mentioned more when we get to that category. That was my favorite movie of 2016. And 2017. It was my favorite movie of 2017. And not only is it like a fun, you know, sort of take on sci-fi, but it's also it's probably one of the most accurate portrayals of alcoholism that you'll ever see. It's an analogy for alcoholism. That's what that movie's about. It nails it. I mean, it nails it. So,
but I just thought it was a great use of the creature to really, you know, really act that out, and how, you know, it was a great analogy of so, you know, thanks for the recommendation there.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Thank you, Jill.
Sure.
Yep. Colossal will come up when we get to underrated science fiction movies. It's just a damn shame that movie got buried and nobody saw it. Maybe because the concept was weird. I don't know. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But, man, it's a good movie. And it's funny, and it's a great kaiju movie. And like I said, it's a great allegory about alcoholism. I mean, just, like, right on the money. And it's the best performance Anne Hathaway's ever given. And I really like Anne Hathaway in a lot of movies, but it's the best thing she's ever done. And Jason Sudeikis goes to places that I didn't think he was going to go to in that. In that movie, all the way around, a phenomenal movie, underrated as hell. All right, let's get to the most and least accurate sci-fi movie. Sci-fi wouldn't be much fun if movies never took any creative license, but some popcorn flicks are just too wrong to enjoy. Here are 10 movies we love for their plausibility and 10 distorted blockbusters we're still trying to forgive. So the most accurate, the best in terms of accuracy.
Avatar.
Avatar. Here's a question about Avatar that it's just a general question to anybody. That Avatar is I believe the biggest movie money wise ever made, like the most profitable movie ever made. Okay. And I don't know anyone who talks about the movie. I don't know anybody who watches it repeatedly. I think it's a piece of crap, quite frankly. I think Avatar is one of the worst movies I've ever seen and one of the stupidest movies. And I've said this before, it's the only movie I've ever seen that was written by drunk monkeys. And not even sober monkeys. Drunk monkeys wrote that script. It's one of the stupidest scripts I've ever heard. The best thing about it was the effects in the 3D. That was the only good thing about that movie. It's a terrible movie. But it made all this money. And I'm still astonished by that. I can't believe it. But I still don't know anybody, even people who saw the movie in the theater and maybe even liked it, I don't know anybody who obsesses over the film like big blockbusters do. Like, how many times have people seen Star Wars, and how many times have people seen Jaws? How many times have, you know, people seen, you know, Back to the Future? These big movies that have become beloved that people watch over and over again and talk about all the time. Avatar never comes up in those kind of conversations.
And yet it's got its own theme park at Disney World.
I don't understand. I just say seriously don't understand it. Now, here's the general question is, does anybody on Earth give a crap about these sequels? Well, Avatar came out like 11 years ago, right?
Yeah, 2009?
It was 2008 because it was up against his ex-wife's movie, Hurt Locker, and Hurt Locker ended up beating it. But does anybody really care about these Avatar movies? I don't understand. I really don't understand it.
No. Well, James Cameron has promised that the sequels will make people crap with their mouth open.
Yeah.
But I don't know how he can deliver on that for a franchise that's been in hibernation for over
it's 11 years.
Yeah, over a decade.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you. I could not tell you the names of any of the characters.
Oh, God, no.
I couldn't tell you what, like, the plot of the movie was other than it was kind of like Pocahontas in space.
Yeah. With Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, like, I mean, I don't remember anything about the movie except that I disliked it. I just remember it being unbelievably stupid. I mean, like, really simplistically and idiotically stupid. And that's the only thing I remember about Avatar. Sam Worthington's one of the worst actors on the planet.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't even act anymore.
No.
He's not even really in the game.
I don't even know anymore. But, Vic, Avatar, you think is the most accurate movie ever made?
Is it on the list of? Is it even on the list of top 10 most inaccurate?
Let me take a look here.
Is it so bad that it didn't even make that list?
It didn't even make that list. Yeah. It didn't even make that list.
It's more science fantasy than science fiction.
Although the solar, whatever that planet, what was the planet it was supposed to be on? That's a real
Pandora.
No, I don't. Well, yeah, you're right there, but
Unobtainium.
I guess I wouldn't even know if you told me about it. But it's based on a real place in outer space. But that's probably the only thing about them.
I don't even know
the movie.
Man. I don't even remember. I just remember everybody was blue and people were flying around and it was stupid and Sigourney Weaver smoked. That's the only thing I remember about it. And then I felt like I sat in that theater for 10 hours. I remember when I saw it, I was just like, when it was over, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Did I grow a beard during the screening of this movie?
I remember watching it in the theater and being blown away by the special effects because I had never seen anything like that before.
Well, you know, the special effects in the 3D.
But it had been a long time.
And the use of 3D. I will say this. The special effects are top-notch. When you're going to spend that kind of money, they better be. And the use of 3D was well done.
Yeah,
but anytime characters open their mouths to speak, it was like, what am I watching?
Yeah, I remember, and I hadn't been to a 3D movie since 3D was in its infancy.
Yeah.
So to go from that, you remember it like a shark would come at your face and you'd go, woo!
Yeah.
That was about it back then. And then I went from that to Avatar, and I was blown away by the effects. And then I looked over at my son, who was probably 5, maybe?
Yeah.
Who's now a junior almost in high school, but I looked over at him and said, this is amazing, isn't it? And he looks at me, he's eating popcorn, he goes, he just shook his head like, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, because he's seen all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, he's got taste.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Avatar. Well, there's like, how many more? 3 more of them?
I don't know.
Is that what he said?
He wants to do an absurd amount.
I just don't understand at all.
I don't know.
Ugh. All right. Here's Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi. The movie that I'd recommend is The Drift. It's a British science fiction movie.
Okay.
And it's about salvage operations in the future and things that go wrong, you know, which, of course, will go wrong at some point. But it also has the science fiction element of we have space crystals that we found a way that we can actually move space faster. But then they go bad. And then, you know, and suddenly everybody's abandoned in different parts of the solar system and nearby. So they have to eke out a living, salvaging and getting around.
Mm. Okay, I don't know that movie, The Drift. Okay.
Yeah, it actually has won awards, the European awards.
Okay.
But, it's sort of interesting. You can see it on YouTube.
All right, cool. I'll look for it. Thank you, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
thank you.
All right, so here's the first one that they mention as the best in terms of accuracy. 2001, A Space Odyssey. which obviously is a great film. Early in the film, a character takes a routine commercial flight to a space station aboard the shuttle sporting Pan Am's logo. Swaps SpaceX for Pan Am in 2001 predicts the ambition of the private spaceflight industry. Even AL 9000's nuanced descent into lethal system errors rings true. An expert opinion, you can't train AI for every problem it might have to solve, says roboticist and author Daniel H. Wilson, referring to HAL's response to learning that secrets are being kept from him. Different levels of classified information are exactly the wrench that could turn a predictable learner into a murderer. Oh, man. How's everybody feel about that Alexa in your house right now? How about that? Is that Vic, you remember the news story about how, I think it was last year sometime, that there was a glitch in Alexa and people were reporting that, like, in the middle of the night she would just start laughing?
No, no. Oh, I don't,
man, you don't remember that story?
That would be bizarre.
It would be terrifying.
I have one in every room of my house now, or my apartment.
Do you really?
Yeah. There's not many rooms there, but I have one in our bedroom, Jeannie's bathroom, my bathroom, and the kitchen.
Wow. Wow.
I love it.
I think it's weird. I don't know if I would want one. But that story was like in the middle of the night, all of a sudden you hear Alexa just creepily laughing at like 3 o'clock in the morning with all the lights out. And you're like, what the hell?
They would be all four of them in the garbage by 6 a.m.
Oh, man. All right. So HAL 9000 could happen. And Pan Am with the logo is happening right now with SpaceX. So that's an accurate one for 2001 Space Odyssey. So let's take a break and we'll come back. You know the story of what happened in the 60s when the Space Odyssey came out, right? Do you know the story, Ted?
I mean, a lot of stories. I know a lot of stories.
Well, here's the deal. The movie became a sensation when it came out, okay? And if anybody's seen it, Vic, have you seen 2001?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, so you know the last, like, 15, 20 minutes is insane.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's just like this light show. It's insane. And
I've got a story for you off air.
Okay, it goes on forever. But here's what really happened in the late 60s when the movie came out. Hippies would go and see the movie, and at a certain point in the movie, they would drop acid so that it would kick in during the last 15 minutes. And then they would get up and walk to the front of the theater and lay on the floor. Right when their acid trip kicked in, it would happen like right when that happened in the movie. And this was a phenomenon that was happening. Everybody was telling each other at what point in the movie they should drop acid so that they could have the full effect of your acid trip while watching the last 15 minutes of 2001.
I think that's utterly insane. I've never done acid, but I can't imagine what that would do to your brain.
Well, yeah.
What is up with hippies and movies? First, it's Dark Side syncs up with The Wizard of Oz, and now they're taking acid synced up with 2001. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just don't even torture yourself with that.
No, they were loving it, man, and they would lay on the floor. People would lay on the floor of the movie theater in front of the screen and watch it while they were tripping. So it was a phenomenon that happened when the movie came out.
I mean, I believe it. 1968, 69,
right when it was happening. So anyway, that's a fun little tidbit of fact for you. Wonder if people drop acid halfway through Avatar so that they can leave. All right, we got a break here. We're talking sci-fi movies. I got some more accurate ones and then inaccurate ones, and then your favorite sci-fi. We're going to jump into the underrated sci-fi movies, which we kind of touched upon with the great movie Colossal. More of this right after we break here on WGN. That's such a great album, man. That and Rubber Soul. Those are my two favorite Beatle records. Triple Play Thursday, getting off to, well, you can't really get off to a better start than the Beatles. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in. 312-981-7200. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. We're talking about the most and least accurate science fiction movies. We are also going to talk about the underrated science fiction movies of all time. And we want you to jump in with your thoughts on sci-fi movies. We love talking about sci-fi movies, and it's especially fun after we talk about the real science with Rod Pyle, who, by the way, has worked on several movies and several TV shows that are sci-fi related. So here's another one that they say is accurate. Alien is on the list of best and most accurate. The utopian layouts and handy, faster-than-light engines of most sci-fi spacecraft are nowhere to be found in Alien's spaceship. The Nostromo is a snarl of leaking hydraulic lines, cramped eating quarters, and, for long hauls, hibernation pods. The expert opinion, astronaut Tom Jones says the blue-collar craft showed a future where space has become part of the industrial fabric. It will be commonplace. It's a commonplace work environment, sometimes boring, sometimes dangerous, like an offshore oil rig, not an exotic lab. I always thought the production design and the sets representing the Nostromo in Alien was amazing, and really added, I think, to the mood of the film. I thought the structure itself was beautiful and really unusual for the kind of science fiction movies that were coming out at that time. And, you know, they're right about what they wrote here. It's like, you know, compared to the spacecraft that you'll see in, like, the Star Wars movies or any of the other kind of movies that were out, it was darker, and they're right. I mean, you know, it had, you know, leaky stuff. It just felt like it was something that needed to be repaired, and much more likely those are kind of the spacecrafts that we would see in the future. And I think it adds immeasurably to the mood of the movie. I mean, the atmosphere inside the Nostromo is just so creepy and claustrophobic that it adds a lot. By the way, Alien turns 40 this year, if you want to feel like mm-hmm. you're 900 years old. And they're showing a 35mm print as part of the Chicago Critics Film Festival over at the Music Box.
And those kids, you know, the play... They're getting a chance to do it again on Alien Day.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, Ridley
Scott sent him a note. Sigourney Weaver sent him a video.
Saw that.
And they're like, you got permission to do whatever you want to do. I think that's awesome.
Although I got to say, I was surprised that Sigourney Weaver credited Walter Hill as the original screenwriter. I thought that was kind of a dig.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he is the guy. He's the first guy. He wrote the original screenplay of Alien.
What about Dan O'Bannon?
Dan O'Bannon was brought in after Walter Hill.
Are we sure about that?
Positive.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm positive. Dan O'Bannon, and then, but then Dan O'Bannon... who also co-wrote Dark Star and appears in Dark Star, in John Carpenter's Dark Star, was a sci-fi fanatic. And the original concept was Walter Hill. But Dan O'Bannon was hired to come in. But yeah, Alien. Blade Runner considered accurate. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know how accurate Blade Runner is, because we're in the year where it takes place now. and if you watch Blade Runner, the world doesn't really look a lot like, because this is the year that Blade Runner takes place. And so I don't see any flying cars. I don't know about that. But here's what they say. The heart of this neo-noir film, lab-grown replicants on the lam in Los Angeles, is no more or less plausible a premise today. But the backdrop against where they run, fight, and die is a warning of urban and environmental blight. The skies over L.A. are blotted with pouring rain. The implied result of carbon excess and climate change, real-life tech equivalent, the flying cars are sci-fi's most realistic airworthy automobiles. These spinners are vertical takeoff and landing craft are similar to the Urban Aero's Air Mule drone prototype. They require headsets, contact with air traffic control, and pilot's license to operate. Okay, well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they definitely made it look like something plausible for 2019. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's one of the best-looking movies of all time. I mean, in terms of cinematography, production design,
mm-hmm.
oh, my God.
And I think in terms of influence, probably bigger than Star Wars.
Oh, man.
Visually speaking, on what sci-fi would eventually look like.
No,
it's Blade Runner.
I remember the first time I saw it. But this is another movie, and this is a story that we've told 9,000 times on this show. Blade Runner bombed when it came out in 1982. It absolutely bombed, and it did not get good reviews. And then, of course, now it's considered a sci-fi masterpiece, and, you know, one of the best science fiction movies of all time. I think it's the best science fiction movie ever made. I would say that it's Blade Runner, best science fiction movie of all time. But man, when it came out, came out the same year as The Thing, which also bombed. Those two movies came out in the summer of 1982, and I remember loving both of them, and then like being shocked that the critics weren't being really good to him and that nobody was going to see him.
Do you think history is going to be as kind to 2049 to Blade Runner 2049?
I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it will.
I hope so.
It's already happening. People have started to go back and watch it and go, oh, because nobody went to see it when it came out. I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that maybe it was so much time between the movies, and also the fact that it was like 3 hours long. I think a lot of people were put off by that. But everybody's going to see Avengers, and that's over 3 hours. 804 area code says, love the day the earth stood still with Michael Rennie and Patricia Neal, Klaatu Virata Nikte. And I'll tell you what, do not. Everybody knows I love Keanu, but do not opt for the remake with Keanu Reeves because it's horrible. 773 area code talking about Avatar. It's a total ripoff of Fern Gully without the fairies being tiny. The blue paint, the whole storyline was a copy of Fern Gully. Set the bad guy's room machines ripping apart the forest, and it's exactly the same story without the high-tech effects. 708 area code says, I felt Spaceballs was very accurate. Yes. Spaceballs. they've got the Terminator here on the accurate list. The pulpy vision of AI's most unsettling endgame, the robots that could rebel against humanity, it's a concept that's still called the Terminator scenario in academic circles that was surprisingly restrained. The Skynet defense network isn't malicious or power-hungry, just a complex program that has run off the rails. I remember when a buddy of mine saw T2. And he just started, and afterwards he was completely paranoid that was going to happen. He was terrified of Skynet.
Hell, I would.
Yeah.
In 1990, what was that, 1991?
Yeah. 1991. And he was terrified of Skynet.
And it's weird to think that those effects that they use for Robert Patrick, the T-1000, are probably better than some effects you might see today, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
They've held up so well.
Well, I mean, he experimented with that type of special effect on The Abyss, and beautiful effects in that movie. All right. Let's take a quick break here, and we got the news coming up almost immediately.
Your day breaks, your mind aches. You find that all her words of kindness linger on when she no longer needs you. She wakes up, she makes up, she takes her time and doesn't feel she has to hurry. She no longer needs you. And in her eyes, you see nothing.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That closes out the Beatles Triple Play. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. So we've been talking about sci-fi. We had a great conversation with Rod Pyle about real science and space and stuff like that. And now we're jumping into the world of sci-fi movies. If you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are talking about the most and least accurate sci-fi movies. We'll do underrated sci-fi movies. And then anytime you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 with your thoughts on sci-fi. All right, we're doing the most accurate ones, the ones that fall into the best list. Jurassic Park is listed. Here, the premise of Michael Crichton's adaptation, wherein dinosaurs are cloned using blood extracted from preserved mosquitoes, was faithful to early 90s speculative genetic theories, but what captured the imaginations were the creatures themselves, which exhibited behaviors that were news to mainstream audiences. They weren't lumbering reptiles. The T-Rex hit near highway speeds with the menace of a massive So they think that that's pretty accurate in the way that they would act. My thing about Jurassic Park, which I'm not a big fan of Jurassic Park, it turns into a slasher movie, and it literally turns into a slasher movie with the Velociraptors.
I know, it's great. And plus, who doesn't love Mr. DNA? Explaining all the science in one shot.
I don't even remember who.
Oh, when they get on the ride and they have the little DNA cartoon explaining. Explain away how it all works, and then you don't think about it.
To me, the best part of the movie is Jeff Goldblum. He's the best part of the movie, and he Is that when he says, excuse me, are there going to be any dinosaurs in your dinosaur park? Is that?
No, that's later when they get on the actual, that's the first part of the ride. You know, nothing's really happening. Lull you into a false sense of security.
Doesn't it take like literally over an hour before you see a dinosaur in that movie?
I don't know about exactly, but they take their time.
Yeah.
You kind of see a dinosaur.
Here,
no, you see a dinosaur early on. It's just not until, because they have bit where they see it. They see the big long neck ones.
Yeah.
And they have the moment of like, oh my God. And then later on, that's when it turns into the slasher.
Right.
Which is great.
Where the kids are hiding in the kitchen and the velociraptors are basically Jason.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
No. And the other thing about it, I grew up loving dinosaurs, Godzilla and all of that stuff, the giant monsters, the kaiju films. That's what I grew up watching. And that's what I wanted in that movie. Here's the thing. If you're going to make a movie about dinosaurs killing people, then make a movie about dinosaurs killing people. Here's what I'll say. At least there were things in the second one that I liked. I liked the fleeing Japanese scene where the T-Rexes
yeah,
running down the street.
San Francisco.
I think the second one's better than the first one. And I don't hate the third one because the third one is only like 89 minutes long. And when I go and see a movie like that, I want to see dinosaurs eating people. I don't care about characters. I don't care about talking. I paid my money to see dinosaurs eating people. And say what you will about the third one, which is a dumb movie.
Oh, I love it.
It's only 89 minutes long, and dinosaurs eat people real quick in that one. There's no there's not a lot of exposition. There's not a lot of people talking, blah, 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 blah. I want to see people being bitten in half by dinosaurs when I go to those movies. I'll tell you what. I thought the last Jurassic World is the best of the series.
You've got to be kidding me.
I think it's the best of the series.
You've got to be kidding me.
No.
I walked out with like at least a half hour left. I'm like, I've had it.
No, I loved it.
Oh,
that one turns into a gothic horror movie in the last half an hour. No, a real good one. I thought the last Jurassic World was by far the best of the
That's
entire
remarkable.
Series.
I disagree wholeheartedly.
Yeah,
I publicly rebuke you for such things.
Yeah. No, but and you know what? You were a kid when you saw Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah,
because it came out the year you were born.
Yeah, it came out in 93, and then I remember very vividly watching it on tape at a babysitter's house, you know, the kind where they have all the kids go to one mom's house.
Right.
And she put on Jurassic Park for a bunch of like 5-year-olds. God knows why.
Yeah.
And I was the only one who didn't run away. I was just like wide-eyed and having so much fun.
Yeah.
And
I was 27 when that movie came out. And I thought it sucked. Here's the thing that I remember about the screening of that I went to. It was at the Biograph Theater. I'll never forget it. And it was packed. Theater was packed, and it was like a radio station sponsored screening.
Yeah.
Be the 15th caller, man. Get tickets to Jurassic Park. Yeah, it was that kind of thing. And it was also there was also a section that was roped off for critics. So we were in that section, and as you know, and regular listeners know. I've probably seen every episode of Seinfeld about 190 times, but I did not start watching Seinfeld until late 99, early 2000. So I was after it was canceled. So in its heyday in the 90s, I never, ever watched Seinfeld. I never watched it. So I remember I was in the screening, and Wayne Knight shows up in the movie. Doesn't he get spit on by one of those things that has
he gets like the tar poison or whatever,
spits it and it spreads out. It's like wings or whatever the hell it is. Okay, so when Wayne Knight shows up on screen, there was like a little rumble in the theater, and then some guy screams out Newman, and everybody busts out laughing, and I'm just kind of and I had no idea what was happening. I'm looking around. I'm going, what? Why is that? Because I didn't know he was Newman. Because I never watched Seinfeld. I didn't know he was Newman. You know what I mean? To me. He was the big guy from Basic Instinct. That's who he was to me, and from JFK.
Yeah,
I remember him in JFK, which is one of the reasons why that Magic Loogie moment where they say Keith Hernandez spit on them.
Yeah,
and they recreate that scene. One of the reasons why first of all, it's really brilliant and really funny, the whole Magic Loogie on Seinfeld. But because Wayne Knight was in it, that adds like another layer of comedy to it. So, yeah, I just didn't know who Newman was, but he gets killed in Jurassic Park, and everybody thought that was great. Okay, now this is one that they say is most accurate, and I have not looked at the all of the underrated sci-fi movies. This one's got to be on the underrated sci-fi movie, and that's Gattaca, which is a great movie.
Yeah, they showed that every single year in our freshman biology class.
Really?
Yeah, because they would go into genetics. They would do like a very cursory thing, you know, Punnett squares and all that kind of crap.
Yeah.
And then they'd showed Gattaca as like a
fun treat. Great movie.
It's super good.
Yeah. In its opening sequence, Gattaca presents the society-warping concept that rapid, ubiquitous genetic sequencing will reshape the world. Whole lives will be mapped out from birth. New classism will emerge based on genetic predispositions, and real life hasn't caught up with the film's neo-fascism, but the capability is coming. The $10 million Genomics X prize competition hopes to yield the first system in an entire in a sequence of entire genomes for $1,000 or less. Next on the list is Contact, which was mentioned a little bit earlier with Rod. I love this movie.
And that's based on a book by Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan, yeah. I love it. I love it. Much of Contact's authenticity goes back to astrophysicist Carl Sagan, who wrote the original novel. He understood how radio telescope arrays work and why scientists would use math to translate an alien language. Even the climax, Jodie Foster's wormhole ride to a distant planet, showcases enough quantum theory, the expert says, that it's surprisingly credible. With what's known about physics, this might be possible one day.
Well, and you can even see echoes of Contact in something like Arrival.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was a good movie, too.
Yeah. A great, if you like Contact and you haven't seen it yet, watch Arrival.
Yeah, Arrival's great. It's a more Baroque and ambivalent movie.
Yeah.
Than Contact.
That's Villeneuve
and
as well.
Certainly creepy.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved Arrival. I thought Arrival was great. Did you see Annihilation?
Yeah. That really just scrambled my brain, man.
Yeah, last 10 minutes of that movie.
Oh, jeez.
Like, what the hell is going on? And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved that movie. Deep Impact, they say, is accurate. Oh, no, wait, not Armageddon? You're going with Deep Impact? Not Armageddon?
It's not which one is the better movie. It's which one is more accurate.
They came out the same year. They came out within like months of each other.
And Armageddon is
weeks
definitely
of each
the
other.
Better one.
I think they both suck. But well, Deep Impact is a much more serious movie. Like it's
way darker.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like darker. A soap opera. It's like, oh my God, it's about death and what would happen if this thing came and killed everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They also say Minority Report, which is one of my favorite Spielberg movies, is accurate. The premise: psychics who predict crimes is ridiculous. The film's gadgets are not. I mean, you see this now. Seriously, it's like Minority Report.
It's freaky.
It is. I mean, they were really right on top of it in terms of like technology and gadgets. A researcher specializing in human computer interaction will show clips of Tom Cruise swiping mid-air applications to illustrate their goals. The Microsoft Holodesk comes close to the research demo maps, hand movements, and projected images, letting users grasp virtual objects. Yeah, they got that right in that movie. That's a good movie, man. Minority Report?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's a good movie.
Gets forgotten a lot.
It does. I think it's great.
Yeah, I still have it on my shelf.
I think it's great. Okay, now the worst, least accurate. As mentioned by our expert, Rod Pyle, the first one mentioned is The Black Hole. Ridiculous movie. When the protagonist's escape pod flies into one of the universe's most destructive phenomenon, it isn't ripped apart atom by shrieking atom. Instead, passengers have psychedelic visions and emerge safe and sound. And now Armageddon gets mentioned in the least category.
Boo.
It's completely ridiculous.
I know.
NASA sends wildcatters to land on Earth, on the Earth-killing asteroid, and blow it in half. But never mind that the rock is the size of Texas. It doesn't have the gravity to keep the rovers on its surface. A ridiculous detail, the rovers are equipped with mounted machine guns, which one character uses to open fire on everything in sight. I've forgotten everything about that movie except for how much I hate the Aerosmith song. That's the only thing that... That stays with me is how much I can't stand that Aerosmith song.
I was dancing that in my seventh grade dance. Oh, that was amazing. God.
Now, see, the problem is you weren't alive when Aerosmith was good. That's the problem. Because they were fantastic. They were fantastic in the 70s. And then gradually they just started to suck. They had a little comeback there after Walk This Way with Run DMC.
Right.
And I think a couple albums in the late 80s were okay, but by the time that the Close My Eyes thing came out, I was like, okay. And I saw Aerosmith in concert a couple of times, and Toys in the Attic and Rocks, I think, are two of the greatest rock albums of all time.
Sure.
And, well, all right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We're talking sci-fi. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're getting into the least accurate sci-fi movies. We're going to jump into the underrated ones, and we want to hear from you. Where are your sci-fi favorites? 312-981-7200. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. and then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN TV. So you finally came right out and said it, girl. Watch her kiss so long. It was in your eyes. It looks to never fall too long. Oh, all right. Phil Collins, everybody. Patrick Bateman request that?
Unless he's living in the 630.
Oh, okay. It's Phil Collins, everybody. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here. Here till 5. And we're talking sci-fi movies. Now we're talking the least accurate bad in that department. And we're going to talk underrated. And the phone lines and text lines are open if you want to jump in with your thoughts on science fiction movies, 312-981-7200. Canadian Bill says, hi, good science fiction movies. Interstellar, I love that movie. You don't like Interstellar? Is there something wrong with you? Have you no soul?
What? He has no soul. There was nothing about that movie that had any soul.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the effects are amazing.
I sob every time I watch that movie at the end. Sob. Like a baby.
What's that line that, what's her name has? Or it's about how love is like goes against dimensions.
It's
Anne Hathaway.
Hathaway.
I don't know. There, I really just did not, and it's not for lack of trying on the part of the actors.
I think it's the best movie that Christopher Nolan ever made.
Oh, don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the best.
I just, you know, once they get to the bit where he's floating behind the bookshelf, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, I loved it.
Ah, oh, man,
I loved it. I think it's the best Christopher Nolan movie. Inception is a close second, but I think you know, I think it's a great movie. And we've talked about that with Brad. I remember we talked about he was shooting holes in the theories about how that movie, you know, because in his opinion, he would probably include it on the least accurate of science fiction movies.
Which is weird because so many people who really enjoy it tout it as being very accurate and how much research they put into it.
Yeah, I don't care about that. I just thought it was emotionally. I mean, I just thought I was fascinated by it. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was incredibly emotional. I mean, I did not think that I was going to like cry like a baby at the end of that movie, but every time I watch it, I'm overwhelmed by it.
That robot's pretty sweet, though.
And the So I thought it was great. Also, Edge of Tomorrow. That's another good one. With and then Canadian Bill also picks Minority Report. Edge of Tomorrow. It's a great movie, and completely underrated. Like when we do the underrated sci-fi movies, Edge of Tomorrow should be mentioned. Because it's terrific. I mean, look, it's Groundhog Day, but I don't care.
It's Groundhog Day with guns.
It's Groundhog Day sci-fi with guns and Emily Blunt. So that's right there. Let's see. 847 area code says, I thought that the movie Contact with Jodie Foster was great. I really enjoyed it. I agree with you. 815 area code, Outland with Sean Connery. Very underrated, with some of the best miniature work of all time. You ever see Outland?
I did not.
It's really great. It's essentially... it's High Noon in space.
Oh,
that's basically what it is. The quickest way for me to sum it up is it's High Noon in space.
Oh, well, you got my attention.
It's really good. It's really good. Directed by Peter Hyams.
Okay. Yeah.
That came out right around the same time as I want to say maybe a couple of weeks before or a couple of weeks after Alien. So they were out right around the same time. 708 area code says, Running Man is a very underrated sci-fi movie. It's very relevant today with reality shows, way better than The Hunger Games. It's a lot sillier than The Hunger Games. Hey, Lighthead. I thought The Running Man was goofy. I mean, I like it, but it's really stupid. And yeah, it did, you know, predict, you know, reality TV and these reality TV, you know, game shows and stuff. But the best part of that movie is Richard Dawson. Richard Dawson is absolutely the best part of the movie. 708 area code says, what about Leviathan? That's very underrated. Leviathan, directed by the late, great George P. Cosmatos. All right. Okay, back to the worst and least accurate. They put The Matrix on here. Neo wakes to find that machines are using humans' bodies' heat for power. But in reality, burning the calories pumped into people would yield more energy. Okay, so not very accurate. They've got Vanilla Sky here. The protagonist has been in a 150-year cryonic slumber while his neurons navigate the virtual world. But he went under in 2001 when real-life cryonics involved being decapitated and dunked into a vat of liquid nitrogen. The Core. Oh, what a terrible movie that was. Team drills to the center of the Earth in a vessel made of unobtainium to restart the core. Ridiculous detail: the vessel is punctured by a diamond and gets dangerously hot. In reality, it would instantly fill with magma.
Yeah, but it did give us that great South Park parody.
Yeah, that's true. The Day After Tomorrow. Oh, my favorite part of that movie. I mean, it sucks. I hate it. But my favorite part of that movie is it Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah,
is
Dennis, very, it's Dennis, pretty young.
Dennis Quaid's son, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's another terrible Roland Emmerich movie. He's just the worst. He's the worst. I just remember him running from cold.
Yeah, they're running, and I'm
like, what the hell? Where does this say what?
And they like get in front of a fireplace, and suddenly a fireplace full of books is what saves you.
A plausible theory that changing temperatures would disrupt ocean currents, triggering an ice age, is rendered absurd when physics-defying waves of cold air descend on the stratosphere to freeze people. I just remember, like, why are they? Am I supposed to buy this? They're running from cold. I Am Legend. A plague transforms humans into vampires. An immune man uses his blood to make a vaccine, but in real life, he'd have to be infected to create the antibodies for a cure. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Oh, my God. Stuck in a blast radius of a nuclear test. Yeah, Indy hides into the lead-lined fridge. He survives, and decades of high-energy physics research would show that it would melt or vaporized. All right, here's Bob on WGN. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
All right, what's up?
I was calling about a movie called The Quiet Earth. Now, this is a good science fiction movie.
Yeah.
Not the garbage ones you were talking about. I think it was made in New Zealand.
It was.
Back in the, was that the 80s?
Yeah, it was actually, I believe it was made in Australia, and it was the early 80s, yes.
That has been one of my favorite science fiction films ever.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how good that was. Character study, the whole thing with the theory of relativity and an experiment that has gone awry and erased the human race from the planet.
Right. Yeah, it's a good movie. It's a good movie, and one that a lot of people probably haven't seen. So thanks for bringing it up, Bob.
Sure, thanks.
All right, take care. All right, let's break for the news, and we'll come back. More sci-fi talk after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, man. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. One artist, three songs. So we've been talking about sort of ridiculous and inaccurate sci-fi movies. And the last one here on the list is 2012. That's Roland Emmerich again, isn't it?
It's your boy.
God.
Roland Emmerich.
I hate that movie. Yeah. The ridiculous detail here, glacial melting triggers a global flood, but there isn't enough water on Earth to fuel such a biblical disaster. A gram of stolen antimatter is smuggled into Vatican City. The idea that highly unstable antimatter can be transported with ease is pure scientific blasphemy. Yeah.
Were you afraid of 2012 as being the end of the world?
No.
I thought for a second.
Did you?
I did. I did. On I remember December 31st, 2011. Or no, it was... I was thinking that maybe it would be the new year. And then
no,
it was
there was a specific day.
There was a specific day. It was like in the middle. I remember laying in my bed on my laptop and just refreshing Reddit.com. And then when the Australian said, yeah, we're good, that's when I knew.
Well, that's what happened for the millennium, too.
Right.
In 1999, everybody was saying that, you know, computers would shut down, planes would fall out of the sky. Because the computers wouldn't recognize flipping over from 99 to 00.
Right.
And that would just, everything would go nuts, and nothing happened.
My dad didn't get to spend New Year's Eve with our family that year because he worked for Motorola at the time.
Yeah.
So he was in, like, the IT department just trying to switch everything over, especially the pagers. God forbid if the pagers go off.
Well, I remember that here, at the not here, but, I got to sneeze. Chew! But across the river, the night, New Year's Eve, 1999, they had a full news staff. Vic, you would have been in heaven. The overnight,
right?
The overnights had a full news staff in, and like, you know, people, and they had IT guys in. It was like a regular night.
A regular day. I wasn't in news yet, but I know there was some. They were working on coding, right, in computer coding.
Yes.
They were working feverishly to get that fixed, and the scare was that maybe they didn't quite finish in time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I remember everybody was on edge and everything, and I had people over at my house. I had people, you know, we were rehearsing a play that I was in, a Sam Shepard play, oddly enough, Curse of the Starving Class. I was in that and had a great time. So we had the cast and the crew over to my place. And when the, like you said, when everything was fine in Australia, it was like, okay, well, let's see what happens next. Mm-hmm. Nothing. It was one of the most anticlimactic. The build up to that was insane. The Y2K stuff, all of that was just like everybody was on edge. Everybody was freaking out. There were people who were, not everybody, but there was a good portion of people who, you know, we're stocking away stuff in panic rooms, and you
know, because they built it up,
oh,
right?
Big time.
They told the public about it quite a
big time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Several months at least. I think.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh
right?
yeah.
Maybe even yeah.
It was just insane, and it would just in it. You know, and I remember, like I said, everybody was over at our place, and we just kept waiting. You know, as the time zones were moving across, we were like, okay, nothing happened there. You know. And so we were like, all right.
There goes our dreams of a Mad Max apocalypse.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So now we're going to get into underrated science fiction movies. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. They say here in the introduction, science fiction movies have always been a mainstay of Hollywood, but over the years, there have been many that were criminally underrated when they were released and largely have been forgotten over time. For every blockbuster such as Star Wars and E.T., there's a gem such as Gattaca, which is a movie that was left in the dust, which we talked about earlier. Even some science fiction films are considered classics now, such as Blade Runner. They were not appreciated when they were first released, but rather built up a loyal following over the years. So here are the underrated science fiction movies of all time. Sunshine. Directed, except for the ending. I hated the ending of that movie.
It falls apart in the third act.
Yeah.
That's the only big problem with that
movie.
The rest
of it's great.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant.
The rest of it is great. But that ending, I hated the ending.
It's not very good.
Directed by Danny Boyle, this 2007 science fiction thriller follows the crew of a spacecraft on a perilous journey to the sun. The year is 2057, and eight highly trained astronauts aboard the Icarus II are on a mission to reignite the dying sun through the use of a nuclear bomb. While the storyline seems way too outlandish to work, it provides a compelling narrative and a real sense of desperation for the crew who are responsible for saving Earth and the human race. The crew embarks on a 16-month journey to the sun, and on the way they're faced with major hurdles, including the discovery of a distress beacon from the first Icarus ship that they lost 7 years earlier. The tension between crew members builds as the team is forced to deal with adversity and the weight of having the fate of humanity on their shoulders. Great cast. You know, Danny Boyle usually makes pretty great movies. I recommend like the first, even more than the first two thirds of the movie. But man, that ending is tough. I mean, jeez. So how about this? The Man from Earth from 2007. I've not seen this movie. The Man from Earth is a thought-provoking film that's a little rough around the edges and at times feels more like a stage play than it does a film. After history professor John Oldman resigns from the position at the university, his colleagues are shocked and one by one show up at his home looking for answers. The professor tells the group that he's actually thousands of years old and that he's forced to move every few years in order to keep his secret. The professor's answer baffles the acclaimed science fiction writer, baffles the crowd, and tempers and emotions rise as they attempt to poke holes in his story. Written by acclaimed science fiction writer Jerome Bixby in the 1960s, the film adaptation features some cringeworthy performances, but if you're able to get past the poor performances, you'll be treated to a unique sci-fi experience. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it seems like it was a pretty small... It's only 89 minutes.
Is there anybody of note in it?
No, it looks like all pretty small actors. It was made for a budget of only $200,000.
Wow.
But its claim to fame was that it was largely distributed through internet peer-to-peer networks. So,
oh, that's why I've never seen
it.
Okay. 815 area code. We're talking sci-fi if you want to jump in. Sci-fi movies. These are the most underrated. We want to hear from you. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. 815 area code says, how about Galaxina? Oh, God. Come on, man. 708 area code. How about Soylent Green? Yeah, that movie. I remember when I was a kid, I loved that movie. And I watched it as an adult. And I totally Nighthawked it, man. It was totally a Nighthawks.
I think it's still got some charm.
Yeah.
It's clearly a product of its time. But yeah, I think it's still fun.
Definitely early 70s right there. 815 area code says, Nick, John Carter is one of my... What?
It's making a comeback for people.
John Carter?
It is.
Did I see a different movie than other people have seen?
I didn't like it. I'm just saying, it's making a weird turnaround. It honestly is. It honestly is.
That's shocking. John Carter's a terrible movie.
That could have ended some careers. I think it might have ended some careers.
Well, who was the dude who played the lead?
Riggins. It was Tim Riggins from, oh my God. From Friday Night Lights, the TV show.
Is it Taylor Kitsch?
Yeah. Yeah. Willem Dafoe's in it as an alien. I want to say it's not Brad Bird. It's directed by someone else from Disney.
Oh, no. Yeah. It was directed.
Is it Brad Bird?
It was a Brad Bird. Yeah. It was Brad Bird.
Oh, that could have ended his career, man.
Yeah. It was Brad Bird.
But then did he follow it up with Ghost Protocol with the new mission, that Mission Impossible?
I think
and
so.
That saved him?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. 815 area code says Capricorn 1 and Marooned. Well, Capricorn 1 really isn't a science fiction movie. That's more of a conspiracy thriller action movie. I mean, it involves fake space travel and there are astronauts in it. But it's really not, it doesn't fall under the umbrella of sci-fi so much as conspiracy thriller action movie. And it's a good one. I love that movie. I love Capricorn 1. We were talking about conspiracy movies a few weeks back. And, you know, All the President's Men, all the classic ones, 3 Days of the Condor, all of that. But, man, I love Capricorn 1. Just fantastic. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200. We have more underrated sci-fi movies to get to, and we're talking sci-fi movies in general, and we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200, talk and text. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center for today. A cold front passes through Chicago area from the west early in the morning. Highs for the day will probably occur in the morning with colder air sweeping into the area, falling temperatures during the afternoon. For tomorrow, chance of showers south and east of Chicago. A sun cloud mix in the afternoon. Quite windy and cooler. For Saturday, highs will reach the lower 70s. Brisk southerly winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, and clouds will increase at night. Sunday, partly sunny, warmer weather for Easter Sunday. Highs reach the low to middle 70s. And then for Monday, high temperatures will be below the 60-degree mark. Clouds and showers will be likely overnight. It is currently 63 degrees at O'Hare. It is 64 at Midway and 64 at the lakefront. All right. Let's take a quick break. And we got some texts coming in, some calls coming in. And we're talking about underrated sci-fi movies and just sci-fi movies in general. What are your go-tos? 312-981-7200. We'll come back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio here, the Skyline studio, and here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. And I will be joining the Steve Cochran show this morning for my weekly visit at 6:20. Hanging out, talking about some of the entertainment and movies that are coming out this weekend. That's coming up, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about science fiction movies, particularly underrated ones, and your favorites as well. So call or text right now at 312-981-7200. Next on this list of underrated sci-fi movies is Mars Attacks, which is a movie that I love. And that bombed and nobody really likes, but I thought it was great. It's based on a popular series of trading cards. Mars Attacks is an homage to 1950s sci-fi films. It's part B-movie, part dark comedy. It's directed by Tim Burton. The film tells the story of a group of Martians who attack our planet and the unlikely hero who discovers a ridiculous way to destroy them. They say, spoiler, it involves country music. The film features some excellent performances, including Jack Nicholson, who plays both the President of the United States and a sleazy real estate salesman. Although the film is quite violent, Burton and company play it for laughs, finding humor in warmongers, ecologists, media types, as well as gun-toting hillbillies, featuring retro hairdos and ridiculous-looking Martians. This movie has Burton's trademarks all over it. It's one of Burton's best, and it's fun to see the cast having a blast doing this genre send-up. So, I love Mars Attacks, and I think that, we could actually do a subtopic at some point of, like, what are the coolest looking aliens in alien movies? Like, what are the coolest aliens?
Yeah.
The ones in Mars Attacks are fantastic.
They're up there.
Oh, yeah.
They're up there.
Oh, yeah.
But we all know what number one is.
Who's that?
It's the Xenomorphs. It's the one from Alien.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But the Mars Attacks ones crack me up. Like,
oh, they're so funny.
They're hilarious.
And they talk like Beaker from Sesame Street.
I got it. Every time the aliens made some kind of statement or something, I love the fact that they just blast everybody, like to disintegrate everybody. And of course, as I've mentioned a million times on the show, it features one of the greatest shut ups of all time, with Jack Nicholson streaking "Shut up, shut up, shut up" at Rod Steiger. That's one of the greatest shut ups of all time. You know, is my favorite shut up of all time. There's two of them, and they're both in Paul Thomas Anderson movies. Philip Seymour Hoffman on the phone with Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, and Julianne Moore in Michael Murphy's office at the beginning of Magnolia, when she's distraught over Jason Robards, and she says "shut the blank up" like, I don't know, 18 times or something in that scene to Michael Murphy. Paul Thomas Anderson does a lot of things great, like almost everything great, including having memorable shut up scenes in his movie. I gotta say, I think the best is though as Philip Seymour Hoffman on the phone with Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love is fantastic. That's fantastic. I miss him. Man.
One of the best.
Oh, my God. That, you know, that was a tough one. That was a real tough one, man. When I heard about Philip Seymour Hoffman's death, that was hard. I remember it was, I can't remember, I mean, what was it, like 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago at this point?
I was still in college at the time. I remember
maybe it was even longer than that then?
Well, no, I got out of college like 3 years. I started college in 2012.
All right.
So it was some, I feel like it was
somewhere
in
that time.
It was
Super Bowl Sunday. I know it, I just remember vividly it was Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, it was somewhere in that time frame.
Yeah. All right. Sci-fi movies. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hi, good morning. How you doing?
Good.
There was a good shut-up in Breaking Bad. The Sky, Walter White's wife had a shut-up scene.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. And then there's Jim Brown, of course, is in the gladiator suit in Mars Attacks.
Right.
Yeah. In terms of underrated sci-fi films, I had three I thought of that you're sadly never really mentioned all that much these days. What one of them is The Hidden.
Great movie.
Great movie, yeah. Just full action from the whole movie, plus a very nice, like, buddy story.
Yep.
One that's kind of off the rails, but still highly watchable and wasn't what I expected it to be, was Life Force, which came out in about 87, I think.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart, isn't it?
Life Force is the most notable thing about Life Force is the completely naked woman that's in like 90% of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Toby Hooper movie.
Yeah, it's like a combination of Aliens, sort of, and then almost like Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead, because it's like the people turned into zombies.
Right. I haven't seen that movie in years. All I remember about it is the naked lady. That's the, Yeah, that's her name. That's the only thing I remember is her.
Me too.
That's it.
And the last one, which is classic, is Silent Running.
Oh, yeah. Silent Running is a great movie. By the way, I have this list here of, you know, from this website, and they put Silent Running at number one.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, as the most underrated science fiction movie of all time.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. All right, great. Thanks, Rich.
You bet. Have
a good
one.
Take care. Let's see. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw out there, I think Night of the Comet was a really realistic sci-fi movie, because we all know that people that have been turned into zombies immediately flock to local malls to look for healthy people to kill.
Yeah. Well, I thought Night of the Comet was great. That's one of those cult movies from the 80s that people just love. And the two main actresses were at our flashback convention a few years ago, and they were just lovely. They were.
Oh, really? I must have watched that 50 times when I was about 13 or 14.
It's a terrific movie. It's terrific.
It is. It is. And Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Bill. Yeah.
Thanks, Nick.
You've seen Night of the Comet, right, Tom?
Yeah.
It's classic.
It's just
classic.
I'm glad that Life Force got brought up, because I dig Life Force. It's so much fun.
I mean, I haven't seen it in years. I actually had a nickname for Toby Hooper. I called him Toby Fluker, because I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a fluke, because I don't like any of his other movies.
Not even well, some people.
I don't like Poltergeist.
They say that he didn't direct Poltergeist.
Well, I mean, Spielberg had a heavy hand in that, but I still don't think it's a good movie. I never like Poltergeist. I don't think it's scary at all. I just don't. You could probably figure out what my favorite scene is in Poltergeist, right?
I'm gonna say it's the bit where he takes his face apart.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's the best.
Of course,
it's the best part.
How, who would have ever thought?
It's my favorite part of the whole movie. Bobby says, "I just got home, so maybe someone already mentioned Liquid Sky. Liquid Sky, very weird movie. Have you seen Liquid Sky?
Yeah,
it's a very weird movie.
I think I actually picked that up at." Odd Obsession.
Of course you did. That's the place to. That's absolutely
Liquid
the
Sky.
Place you're going to find it. I liked it though. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember what the lead actress's name is, but I really liked her in that. I'm blanking on her name. So here's Jim on WGN. Hey, Jim.
Hey there. I think Cowboys versus Aliens is a really cool movie.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, I'm happy for you.
I guess it's one that you don't like.
No, I can't stand it, actually. I think it's really stupid.
I thought it was campy. I thought it was interesting. I just thought it was like a fun movie to watch.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Take care. Oof. Cowboys versus Aliens was brutal, man. Best part of that movie was Harrison Ford. He was by far the best part of the movie. And it was, you know, because Harrison Ford, just for so many years, just seems grumpy and, like, doesn't care. And even in movies, he's like, yeah, whatever, I don't know, why am I here? And he's great, though, and he's great in 2049. He's great in 2049. But he hasn't, but for some reason, he seems to be having a blast in Cowboys versus Aliens.
He was on board for it. Something about it.
He's the only person who's really committed in the entire movie. Like Daniel Craig.
Yeah, I don't know why.
It's a terrible movie, but I really thought, I mean, every time Harrison Ford came on scene, I'm like, boy, I don't know what John Favreau put in his coffee, but he seems pretty happy to be there. So, all right. We got a break here. We got the news coming up, and then we got more sci-fi to talk about. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and we're here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. And again, you guys stick around at 6:20. I'll be on with Cochran and the gang to chat for a little bit. All right. That's Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah!
So who requested that, and what was that, as we all know?
So that was Squat requesting a little Mott the Hoople.
Right.
Song is called One of the Boys.
There you go, Mott the Hoople. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. We got some texts here. We've been talking about science fiction movies. We had a really fun visit with Rod Pyle, as we do every month, our space expert. And he has worked on science fiction movies and on science fiction TV shows. It's like a consultant and a guy that helps out. And we were talking about inaccurate science fiction movies, and now we're talking about underrated science fiction movies. And we love talking about sci-fi, so we want to hear from you guys. What are your go-to science fiction movies? Which ones are great, and which ones do you think are underrated? And I've got an article here from online that talks about underrated science fiction movies, and we got more of those to talk about with you. Our phone lines and text lines are open at 312-981-7200. Here's Daryl on WGN. Hi, Daryl.
Hey, how's it going, man?
All right.
I'm washing my hands. I just get out of work.
All right.
So we were talking about, I was talking to the gentleman about the movie Life. I don't know who the actors are or whatever, but I know that's kind of intriguing.
It's, it's Jake Gyllenhaal. Ryan Reynolds is in that. Is it Ryan Reynolds or Ryan? Yes,
it's Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, not Ryan Gosling. Get your Ryans all mixed up. I was not crazy about that movie, actually.
Really?
Yeah, no. I was like, it seemed to me like the filmmakers saw Alien a few times.
I just thought from the start, it's a moral to the story, you know, as far as like going up to the end. I mean, the ending was kind of, that's going to creep me out for a long time.
Yeah, okay. All right, cool,
because
man.
when you see, okay, he's like, of course, it flipped the script on everything, and next thing you know, like, okay, I think it probably should be a sequel or something, you know?
Yeah, all right, well.
Probably explain it, you know?
All right, Daryl, that definitely falls into the underrated category for sure.
So about other gentlemen, did it actually make it to theaters?
It bombed. Nobody went to see it, but it did make it to theaters.
I watched it a few times. I'm like, I suggested to a few people, so yeah, maybe it's underrated. No. Okay.
All right, Daryl, thanks, buddy.
Hey, appreciate the info. Right,
take care, buddy. Thanks. Take care. There you go. All right, yeah, I wasn't crazy about that movie.
That was in and out of theaters just...
Oh, my God.
It was like crap through a goose.
I remember we reviewed it, and we saw the box office the following the following week, and it was a... Because they spent a lot of money on that movie, and it was one of those movies that had... It was one of those movies that had a troubled production. It really was. I remember that I think... It got delayed by a bunch of months, and I think the director had to go in and recut things and change things. In other words, it was one of those, you know, infamously expensive, gone over budget and delayed kind of movies, and it felt that way when you watched it. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Next on this this article about underrated science fiction movies came up earlier, and that's Colossal, which was my favorite film of 2017. Here's what they say about Colossal, and it's a real big shame that Colossal did not find an audience. It tanked at the box office. Nobody went to see it. And it's too bad. It was absolutely my favorite movie of 2017. And filmed in just 6 weeks with a budget of just $15 million, Colossal received generally positive reviews despite being a flop at the box office. The story follows an unemployed and alcoholic writer named Gloria, played by Anne Hathaway, who is unintentionally controlling a giant monster halfway across the planet. After seeing news reports that a giant lizard-like monster was terrorizing Seoul, South Korea, Gloria discovers the monster is mirroring her movements. Gloria, who can barely take care of herself, is now tasked with discovering a solution or being responsible for millions of deaths. The film is essentially a kaiju film in the vein of Godzilla or King Kong, and while the premise is silly, the film features some interesting thoughts on relationships and human emotions. Colossal features some great performances from Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis. It's unfortunate that most people missed that one. Yeah, it's not only a really cool kaiju movie, and it's funny, and it's very imaginative, and not only interesting thoughts on relationships and human emotions, but as I've said before, it's one of the best and most accurate portrayals of alcoholism ever.
And isn't Tim Blake Nelson in that?
Nelson is in it. Yeah, it's a really terrific cast, and everybody's great in it. Special effects are really good, especially for the low budget that they had.
Yeah. What was it, $15 million?
$15 million.
That's a $15 million picture?
Shot in 6 weeks.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Nacho's the man. That movie, the thing about it was I was like, oh, that looks fun, I just didn't expect it to be what it was. I didn't know it was going to be a heavy, it was a pretty heavy experience for me, personally. And I identified with it in a pretty deep and significant way. And it went beyond just being a really cool sci-fi movie with a nice performance by Anne Hathaway. And it became a movie that touched me really personally. And I love it. I think it's great. And I watch it a lot. And it affects me every time. And I'm telling you that the final line of the movie,
And what a great edit.
It's just fantastic. The way it did, like her reaction, like Anne Hathaway's reaction to the question. And I don't want to give it away, but her reaction to the question. I remember when it cut to black, I audibly went, oh, man. Me and the other three people in the theater.
I know Alamo Drafthouse pushed it really hard.
I went to see it. Here's the thing. I went to go see Colossal. I went a second time because I'd seen it already. I saw it the first week it came out. Then we reviewed it. And then the second weekend obviously was in like less theaters and stuff. And I went to go see it because we saw, what the hell was the name of the movie? Maybe you can remember the name of the movie where it's basically Army Hammer's in it. It takes place in the 70s. Brie Larson is in it. It's basically a Mexican standoff in a warehouse for 2 hours.
Oh, that's Free Fire.
Yeah. One of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And so when that movie ended, it's a movie, because I go with my parents to see a movie every Saturday. And we're going to see The Curse of the La Llorona.
La Llorona?
Yeah, we're going to see that. My mom hates, I've been subjecting her to some pretty serious horror movies recently. Like we went to, she went to see Us and she freaked out during that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Pet Cemetery freaked her out too. But she does, she does okay with it. I did not take her to see Hereditary because that would have put her through the, she would have
yeah,
just.
Yeah, that's a big no.
No way. Because I went to a screening of it, and then the weekend it opened, I was like, we're not going, there's no way that you're going to make it through Hereditary. No way. She barely made it through Us. Us freaked her out. So we went to go see, that afternoon we went to go see, what's it, Free Fire?
Yeah, Free Fire.
Okay, so we go see Free Fire. I can't remember the name of the movie. It was so bad. We go see Free Fire. I get home, and I hated the movie so much that I jumped on the L, and I went to Rosemont, and I saw Colossal again. I was like, because it was one of the only theaters that was still playing it. I'm like, I got to get the taste of this movie out of my mouth. So I'm going to see Colossal again.
There you go.
And there were three other people in the theater, and it was a Saturday night. It was a Saturday night. I don't know.
It's one of those movies that every time you pop it in, you're just like, man, it's like a rich bite of chocolate.
Yeah. I mean, I adore it.
So satisfying.
I adore that movie. I really, really do. Also, I do want to mention that, you know, my mom doesn't do really well with horror. My dad's fine with it because he's the one who took me to all the horror movies mostly when I was a kid. So he's fine with it. But I will never forget the reaction that they had right at the end of Mother. And it, by the way, a great movie. If you've never seen it, that is a very divisive movie, though. I mean, I know people who hate that movie. I think it's great. I think it's Aronofsky is one of my favorite directors, and that movie's completely off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when it was over, as soon as it ended, my dad just goes, "Well, that was different." That was my dad's review of Mother.
I wish that was a pull quote in the poster.
Yeah.
Darren Aronofsky's Mother. Yeah.
Well, that was different.
It's different.
It certainly is. I adore that movie, man.
Oh, it's great.
Oh.
I watched it alone. Oh, yeah. I think I had a shift here. I must have done, I think I did the overnight with Dave Plyer on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I got done and I was like, well, I can't sleep. Mother's on at like 10 o'clock at the River East. Pop on over there completely alone. And I just had a panic attack.
Well,
for two
it's
hours.
Nuts. It's a crazy
it's
movie.
Awesome.
And the performances are all so good. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence is great in that movie. Like, that is an exhausting performance. I mean, she is demanded to do a lot in that movie. And she's great in it. And then, come on, man. Javier Bardem is great in it. But come on, Michelle Pfeiffer and Ed Harris? What are we talking about here? It was just so cool to see them on, you know, and I love Michelle Pfeiffer. She's one of my favorite actresses ever. And Michelle Pfeiffer and Ed Harris in Mother were unbelievable. They were unbelievable. It's such an insane movie. It is such an insane movie.
People hate me so much for liking that movie.
Oh, you know, no, I get a lot of, like, how the hell could you like that movie? I mean,
people don't trust my taste anymore because I like that movie.
Well, you know, when we reviewed it on the air, all three, Colin and Eric and I, we all loved it. We all gave it a really great review. And everybody who was listening was like, are you guys insane? Because here's the deal. That's one of those movies, and there are a lot of them, that you either love or you hate. There's no in between. You know what I mean? I don't know anybody who said Mother was okay. I don't know anybody. So, yeah, you're going to have a very strong opinion one way or the other.
Nick D's Film Club, Mother.
Oh, God.
Coming your way.
Oh, I would love to show it.
That'd be great.
I would love to show it. Yeah, anyway. All right, let's take a quick break. We got the weather for you, and then we'll jump back and talk in sci-fi here. Here's your weather from the WGN Weather Center. Cold front will pass through Chicago today, west early in the morning. The highs for the day will probably occur just in the morning. Cold air will sweep into our area, falling temperatures during the afternoon. Tomorrow, chance of showers south and east of Chicago with a sun-cloud mix in the afternoon. It'll be quite windy and cooler. Saturday, highs will reach lower 70s, brisk southerly winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Clouds will increase at night. Sunday, partly sunny and warmer for Easter Sunday. Highs will reach the lower to mid-70s. And then for Monday, high temperatures below the 60-degree mark. Clouds, showers are likely overnight. It's currently 63 degrees at O'Hare. It's 64 at Midway. And it's 64 at the lakefront. All right. We'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll jump right back into the topic of science fiction movies. I got more underrated ones to share with you. And I want to hear from you guys as well. So watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, that's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! We're not going to have time for a final Triple Play Thursday.
We'll have one more Mott the Hoople, and then we'll sneak in one little one.
One from a Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, one from a Triple Play.
Okay, but it'll only be one because we only have two more breaks coming up before the end of the show.
Yes, sir.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking sci-fi. I'm talking underrated science fiction movies that we're chatting about and your favorites. Got a bunch of texts. We'll get to those in a minute, but here is Keith on WGN. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
One of the films that I really liked was Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, yes. The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Yes. Yeah. Laugh while you can, Monkey Boy.
Yeah, laugh while you can, the Monkey Boy. Lithgow is unbelievable in that movie.
He's fantastic.
He's unbelievable in it. And I love that movie. I think that movie is just beautifully weird. And it was, I don't know how it got a big 1,000 theater theatrical release. I have no idea how that happened. But I love it, man. I think it's great. And, that, you know, they made the first one in order thinking that they were going to end up making a series out of them, and they didn't.
Yes, obviously. Yes.
So, but it's a great movie.
A quick little story. I met a girl, and I found out that she liked Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah.
I married her.
Well, that's good. That's good, man. That makes sense.
Any girl likes Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah. That's a keeper, Keith. That's a keeper.
Oh, definitely.
Right there.
All right, definitely.
Very cool. All right, buddy. Take care.
All right, brother.
I told you the Dead Ringer story, right, Tom?
Yeah. First date, Dead Ringers.
I took her on a first date to see Dead Ringers, but the kicker is I had already seen it. Yeah. So I knew the content of the movie, and I was just like Keith there. He met a woman who likes Buckaroo Banzai. It's like, oh, my God. So I was, like, testing this girl. Yeah. Like, if she likes Dead Ringers, maybe this will last. She hated the movie, and we was...
Oh, well. It wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, clearly. God. John is on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello. I want to talk about The Andromeda Strain.
Great movie.
The novel was one of the first grown-up novels I ever read when I was like 11, and I liked the movie because it was realistic. It could happen.
Yep.
There was nothing like ridiculous. It was set in the current time. There was nothing really fictional about it. It was a this could actually happen kind of movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. And it's very faithful to the book. They did a great job adapting the book to the screen, and it's a complicated book. It's a complicated novel, and they did a real nice job bringing it back. Andromeda Strain, terrific movie. A great example of science fiction as well. Thank you, John, for the call. 312-981-7200. Let me get a few texts here, and then we'll get back to these underrated movies that this website talked about. 847 area code says, Starman, with a lot of exclamation points. I agree with you. I love Starman. John Carpenter. Jeff Bridges. What's not to love? Karen Allen. Well, I mean, what do we know? What are you, nuts? And that one doesn't get as much, you know, people don't, when you have conversations about John Carpenter's movies, Starman doesn't come up a lot, which is really unfortunate because it's a great movie. And it showed that he, you know, because John Carpenter is gifted in so many ways, but you never really saw him do sort of like romantic comedy. And there's that Starman is a very funny movie. I mean, and Jeff Bridges is unbelievable in it. And if you cast Karen Allen in your female lead as your female lead, every man in the room will be in love with her. That's just what happens because she's Karen Allen. But just he'd never, it's like it happened one night. It's this great, wonderful road movie. And Carpenter showed a really lovely light touch to it, and yet he handled like the scary stuff. The first like 10 minutes of the movie are essentially it's essentially dialogue. There's no dialogue at all, like in the first 10-15 minutes of the movie. It's all just the Starman arriving and everything, and it's done mostly without dialogue. And then it turns into this really wonderful romance road movie with a great sci-fi background. I love that movie. Starman is great. What about Barbarella with Jane Fonda? Well, it's something.
I used to have that poster up in my room.
Well, she's beautiful. The movie's really stupid, but she's beautiful.
It's Jane Fonda and Barbarella.
Yeah. 815 area code says, I'm a big Waterworld fan. That makes two of us. I'm a huge Waterworld. I love Waterworld.
Talk about movies that got a reevaluation over the last, I don't know what,
Well, I'll tell
years?
You what was really funny. I've talked about this on the air before. But we were living together, and my first wife came home, and I was watching Waterworld. And she comes in, she's like, why the hell are you watching Waterworld? And I'm like, because it's awesome, that's why. And she's like, what? And she's like, and she was like disgusted with me. So she goes in the other room or whatever. She comes home another time, but maybe a month later, she comes home again from work, and I'm watching Waterworld again. She's like, all right, that's it. And I think that's why we got divorced. I'm pretty sure that's why we got divorced. Because she came home twice and caught me watching Waterworld. I think that was like, no, I can't live with a man who voluntarily watches Waterworld.
I feel like she would have preferred coming home and finding you with another woman than watching
Waterworld. I think it would have been better off, I think. Also, this 815 area code who likes the Waterworld also likes Mad Max and the Road Warrior. Well, yeah. There'd be no Waterworld without the Mad Max movies. And if you're a regular listener of this show, you know how many times I've seen Fury Road. I can't count them. I can't count how many times I've seen Fury Road. When that movie came out, I saw it 3 times in 2 days. The weekend it opened, I saw it 3 times in 2 days. I'm not kidding. I've lost count on how many times I've watched Fury Road. It's my third favorite movie of all time. It's Magnolia, Risky Business, and Fury Road. It's an insanely good movie. It's my favorite of all the Mad Max movies, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Because all the Mad Max movies are good. And yes, so is Beyond Thunderdome. I don't care what anybody says.
Okay. Yeah, that gets a real bad rap.
I like Beyond Thunderdome. People don't like the kids in it.
People are touchy with kids.
Yeah, people are touchy with the whole group of kids.
Yeah.
But you can't. The climax of that movie is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The Thunderdome sequence is incredible.
Yeah. Plus, it gave us the word Thunderdome. Yeah. How much better could it get?
Master Blaster. And the Road Warrior, you can't even talk. The Road Warrior, my God.
Yeah.
What an unbelievable movie. I mean.
And I'm still a really big fan of the first Mad Max.
Me too. I love it. Great. I love George Miller's movies. He's only made one movie that I didn't like, which is Eastwick. It's the only movie that George Miller has made that I don't like. I love Lorenzo's Oil. I love the Happy Feet movies. I love Babe, Pig in the City.
There you go.
He's the man. And you know what was really funny? It's that Robert Rodriguez, on the El Rey Network, he's got this show where he goes one-on-one with a director. And he had George Miller on. And he interviewed him. And George Miller, the only movie that George Miller doesn't like that he made is The Witches of Eastwick. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I feel...
They've all got one.
I feel justified. He said the experience was terrible because he was working with like a big studio and big stars. He said it was awful. So... All right, more sci-fi stuff. Everybody hang on. We got a break for the news, which is up next.
Hi there, your friendly neighborhood sadist wanna take you for a ride. Don't tell me about the nights that I make you cry.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, completing the old Mott the Hoople Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And it's Nick DiGilio. We're here till 5, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're talking about sci-fi movies. I've got some more underrated sci-fi titles to throw at you. And I want to hear what you guys go to when it comes to science fiction. We got some texts here. 708 area code says Cloverfield is one of my favorite sci-fi movies. Yeah, I like Cloverfield, except it made me sick because we got to the screening late and we had to sit in the front. And the shaky cam stuff normally doesn't, like Blair Witch didn't bother me or anything like that. But that one, because we were sitting so close, that one I really got physically ill watching Cloverfield. I did. I had to look down at the floor a bunch of times. Because that whole shaky cam stuff for Cloverfield, that really did make me, it made me nauseous. So, Bob Medea, our Sherlock Holmes guy and sci-fi nerd, says that Silent Rage, starring Chuck Norris, a shady government think tank injects a killer with rejuvenated serum that renders him unstoppable. He then fights small-town sheriff Chuck Norris. It was made in the 80s, and it's lots of fun. I haven't seen Silent Rage in a long time, but I remember liking it. And that came out at the height of the slasher film popularity. So it was like this combination of, and Chuck Norris was very popular at that time too. So it was like this combination of what would happen if we put Chuck Norris in a slasher movie. And that's kind of like what the style was. And I thought it was good. I remember liking it. I haven't seen it, but I haven't seen it in years. Maybe if I go back and watch it, I'll probably end up nighthawking it. I don't know. But, yeah. Liked it when I was 16. But I liked Nighthawks when I was 16, so that should say something right there. All right, here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The one that I've got is from 1968. It was Journey to the Far Side of the Sun. In Europe, they called it Doppelganger.
Hmm.
They send a space probe off to the sun, and they find a planet opposite the sun that we've never seen before.
Yeah, I don't remember this movie at all.
That's Roy Thinnes. It was back in 1968.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look it up.
Came out from the same studio as 2001. A lot of same people worked on the special effects. It's the old model type special effects.
The miniatures, yeah, sure.
Right.
Right. Okay. Journey to the Far Side of the Sun. We'll have to look for that one.
Thank you.
All right, Paul, take care. 312-981-7200. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right, man.
I had a couple for you, but I'm sitting here thinking, and then I got a few more. Three by Terry Gilliam, Time Bandits, Brazil, and 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, those are all great. Those are all great, man. I remember that when I saw Time Bandits, being the maniac Python fan that I was, I had also seen Jabberwocky, which he made before Time Bandits,
and more fantasy type of thing.
Yeah. Jabberwocky was a weird movie. Well, it's Gilliam, but I remember seeing Time Bandits and just being blown away by how original and creative.
Oh,
it was.
Yeah.
I mean, just blown away. And then Brazil just goes beyond it. I mean,
freaking Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing about Time Bandits is, you know, that movie's got an insanely dark ending. I mean, like, oh my God. I mean, a movie that for all intents and purposes, it's like Terry Gilliam making a children's movie.
Right.
And it ends, what? I remember sitting in the theater going, oh my God. But it's a great movie, though.
Yeah. The other thing I got for you, Seconds with Rock Hudson, John Frankenheimer.
That's a great movie.
Yeah,
that's a great movie. You know, it's weird that Mike, they used to show they used to show Seconds on the 3:30 movie on Channel 7 pretty regularly.
Yeah, well, that's how I think I came.
Yeah, that's what I know. It's like such a weird movie to show at 3:30 in the afternoon.
And Moon by Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah,
with the great Sam Rockwell.
Right,
right. And Moon
coming
is
coming back to Cronenberg. Videodrome.
Oh my God, what a great movie! What a great movie, man. Videodrome. You know what's another one that he did that like no one talks about?
Rabid.
Rabid. I mean, that's a classic.
Oh, the one with the Scanners, right?
Scanners. No. It's Existence.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Existence,
right,
man.
Right, with Jude Law and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Right?
That is a great movie that five people saw.
Well, I was one of them.
Yeah, no, I love Existence. That's a great film, man. That great film. So, all right, thanks, Mike.
All right, Nick, take care.
You too. Have a good one. 312-981-7200. How about this next one that's mentioned in the article, Snowpiercer? Have you seen Snowpiercer?
Yeah, I loved it.
It's such a great
movie. It's just awesome.
It's just great. And how insane is Tilda Swinton in it?
She's
fantastic in it.
She will never cease to amaze me in how she can literally transform herself with here she's got the aid of great costuming and the set design is incredible.
She makes such weird and original choices every time out. You know, she played three characters in Suspiria. She was fantastic as all three of them. And, So, I mean, I love her.
My hope is that if they ever made a David Bowie biopic, that she would play David Bowie.
Yeah.
Because she embodies the androgyny of him, the strangeness of him.
Did you see Constantine?
Yeah.
Okay. I love that movie.
I think it's pretty all right.
Everybody hates it.
Yeah. It was
because it's not at all. Keanu Reeves is absolutely the wrong guy to play the character based on what he looks like and sounds like in the comic.
He is not John Constantine.
No. But I like the movie a lot, and I don't read comics, so I didn't care about that. I just really like the movie. And when Rachel Weisz shows up, or not, well, Rachel Weisz is in it. She's fantastic. But when Tilda Swinton shows up at the end, please. I mean, okay, next. I don't like this movie, and everybody else loves it. They included here an underrated science fiction movie. And everybody I know loves this movie. I've tried. It's one of those movies that I've tried because everybody I know loves it. Like, I've seen Silence of the Lambs. I saw Silence of the Lambs three times in the theater. I hate it, but I went three times because every single person that I know and respect loves that movie. You know what I mean? Like, intelligent people who know their film, that I respect their opinions, love that movie. And I still hate it. I just can't. I can't do it. And this is another one. I don't hate this movie, but I just don't like it. Dark City with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
I just never. I couldn't get into it. And I know people who love Dark City. But I've tried a couple times to see it, and it just didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I think it was a movie for me that I thought was really cool because that's Alex Proyas,
yes.
Right? I thought it was really cool. I wouldn't say I loved it, but I really liked it, and it kind of was a taste, you know, got my taste buds ready for something like The Matrix.
Yeah.
In terms of going that sort of direction. Yeah, I don't know many people that just love it.
No, I know a lot of people who do.
Love it?
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was just really cool. I just thought it was a cool movie.
I've tried and it just leaves me cold every single time I watch it. I'm not discounting, you know, the originality or the imagination that's on display because it's an original kind of a movie, but I just was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Next one here that they say is underrated is, and it's a great movie, Scanner Darkly. Based on a book by celebrated sci-fi writer Philip K. Dick. Scanner Darkly stars Keanu Reeves as an undercover detective in a totalitarian society who is working with a small group of drug users trying to reach the big distributors of a brain-damaging drug called Substance D. Renowned writer Robert Downey Jr., Woody Harrelson, and it's that rotoscope animation technique,
yeah,
that Linklater used earlier in Waking Life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think is more appropriate for Scanner Darkly.
Well, I think they perfected it because there were parts of it when you're watching Waking Life where it's almost distracting.
Yeah.
This is like it fits the world and it fits the film a lot better.
I also think it's a great movie. I mean, just,
it would have been good regardless of the rotoscoping. It just adds to the whole drug thing.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's also like the ending is heartbreaking. This is another one of those movies that has a really heartbreaking ending. But it's, you know, it's Richard Linklater whose track record is pretty unbelievable. I'm not a fan. The only one of his movies that I don't like is Waking Life is the only one that I don't really like. All of his other movies, I think, are either really, really good or absolutely great. And Scanner Darkly is definitely in that category of absolutely great, I think. Terrific. Terrific movie. All right, we got a break here. And, we'll take a break, and then after we break, we are going to wrap up the show and wrap up the science fiction. We got more underrated titles to talk about and more from you guys. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Your weather forecast. We've got rain in the morning. Cold front passes through Chicago area early in the morning. The highs for the day will probably occur in the morning with colder air sweeping into the area. Falling temperatures during the afternoon. For tomorrow, chance of showers south and east of Chicago. A sun cloud mix in the afternoon. Quite windy and cooler. Saturday, highs will reach the low 70s. Brisk southerly winds 10 to 20 miles per hour with an increase in cloud at night. For Sunday, partly sunny and warmer for Easter Sunday, with highs reaching the low to middle 70s. So it's going to be a really nice day for Easter. And for Monday, high temperatures below 60 degrees. Clouds and showers will be likely overnight. Currently 63 degrees at O'Hare, at 64 at Midway, 64 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're wrapping up the show. And if you want to jump in for the last part here, talking about sci-fi titles that you love, and we got more underrated ones too, that's coming up right after we break.
Is this moment 21st century is yesterday.
All right, that would have been a triple play of In Excess. Who requested that?
That was Ike.
Ike. Yeah. 80s.
Coming in with the NXS.
That's right. All right. Yeah, so we're here. How you doing, everybody? It's Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we've been talking about sci-fi movies. And if you want to jump in for the last part here, we would love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200. Also, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Here's Carl on WGN. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
A movie called The Arrival.
With Charlie Sheen. Yeah, Charlie Sheen. I know that one, yeah.
Extremely well done movie. Really great story. And an interesting tie-in to global warming, because Charlie Sheen's like a radio astronomer, and he picks up a signal from outer space, and it turns out that the aliens are already here, and what they're doing is they're modifying our climate to warm it up,
yeah,
to make it more hospitable for the aliens to live in.
Yeah, that's a really terrific movie. And then not to be confused with the Amy Adams movie just called Arrival. That's a completely different movie.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, amazingly enough, Sheen does such a good job. Help me. Every time it's on, I have to watch it.
Yeah, no, it's a good movie. And Sheen's really good in it. Charlie Sheen's really good in it.
He does a good job. He carries Melissa. He's the star. He's the guy. So, yeah, thank you. Take care.
All right, Carl. Thanks, man. Have you seen that movie? Have you seen The Arrival? It's really good, man. Really good. Okay, how about this one? Repo Man. Nah, Repo Man rules. Created by avant-garde British filmmaker Alex Cox, the well-received sci-fi comedy Repo Man stars Emilio Estevez and Harry Dean Stanton as a couple of small-time car repossession men who get caught up in a UFO and alien conspiracy. While praised by critics when it was initially released, the movie was yet another effort that proved to be too strange for mainstream. The Boston Society of Film Critics awarded Best Screenplay in 1984, but it didn't help make a profit. Made for $5 million, Repo Man earned only a It cost $5 million to make. It only earned $129,000 at movie theaters. Wow. But since then, it's got a cult following now. But man, I didn't know. I mean, I knew it was. I knew it wasn't very successful, but my God, only $129,000. And then, of course, the movie rules. It's great. And got a great soundtrack. Emilio Estevez is fantastic in it. Isn't that funny that we just talked about a Charlie Sheen movie and now we're talking about an Emilio Estevez movie?
Yeah. I'm always compelled to call Charlie Sheen Carlos Estevez.
Yeah. And Harry Dean Stanton, well, that goes without question. It's Harry Dean Stanton. So obviously he's great, and because he's Harry Dean Stanton, and it's one of my favorite Harry Dean Stanton performances. He's so funny. I gotta get my car out of this bad area. And the Rodriguez brothers, you gotta love the Rodriguez brothers. Such a great and weird movie. Here's a great The Host. This is a great movie. Bong Joon Ho directed it. It's basically like it's a monster movie, but it's really good and really also really funny
and heartbreaking at times. There's some real stuff going on.
It's a great movie.
I saw that. I was lucky because I was hearing about it all the time from like the various weird magazines I read. And then I think it was Halloween in like 05 or 06 or something like that.
It came out in 2006.
All right. So I think it might have been the following Halloween. It was making its American cable premiere. And I stayed in. All my friends wanted me to come out. It was Halloween night. I said, no, I'm watching this movie, whether I like it or not. And it was amazing.
It's great. Incredible. I saw it at the River East with about four other people in the theater.
Awesome.
It is a great movie. Also mentioned underrated. We've already talked about it a few times this morning, and that's Gattaca, which is a really terrific movie. They have on the underrated movie list here, they have The Abyss, James Cameron, The Abyss, which was released in the summer of 89. It was Cameron's worst reviewed movies and one that performed very poorly at the box office, hot on the heels of The Terminator and Aliens. Expectations were running extremely high for Cameron's first underwater feature film about a group of deep sea miners who encounter aliens beneath the ocean. However, critics and audiences were disappointed when the film was released. It cost a lot of money and it made under $100 million at the box office. So I think The Abyss is a great movie. I loved that movie. I think it's great. I think the effects are great. I think Ed Harris and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio are fantastic in it, and Michael Biehn rules in everything.
They're finally doing an HD upgrade.
Are they?
Yeah, they're working on a restoration right now.
I think it's a terrific movie. Here's an interesting one that they chose from 1989, Millennium, with Kris Kristofferson and Cheryl Ladd. The story centers around a commercial airline flight whose passengers and crews are transported 1,000 years into the future. It's got time travel elements and special effects that hold up to this day. It's not a masterpiece, but it's certainly worth seeing. Our caller Mike mentioned this one. Moon came out in 2009. Duncan Jones, singer, the son of David Bowie, who's made some really interesting movies. What was the name of the
Mute?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Source Code.
Oh, it's a great movie.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
Takes place in Chicago, too.
Yeah. You had Kevin Spacey's voice as the computer, and it was basically a one-man show for Sam Rockwell. And I'll watch Sam Rockwell read a book. He's one of my favorite actors on the planet. Always has been. Always has been. I'm trying to remember the name of that. I remember one of the first times I saw Sam Rockwell was in, it was a John Turturro movie. But I remember seeing him and going, who's that guy? And of course, he's one of many cast members who's in one of the greatest movies ever made, the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which is one of the greatest, most beautiful movies of all time that six people saw. An unbelievable cast, that movie. Unbelievable. But Moon is on the list. They put The Thing on the list here as underrated. It's not underrated anymore. Not at all now. Now it's being appreciated as the masterpiece it is. But yeah. All right, how about this? The Blood of Heroes. This is a really good movie. Writer David Webb Peoples and actor Rutger Hauer are best known for their work in Blade Runner. Rutger Hauer in front of the camera, David Webb Peoples is a writer. However, the two also collaborated on another excellent science fiction film, 1989's The Blood of Heroes. Little seen on its initial release and largely forgotten since, The Blood of Heroes is a Mad Max-type movie set in a post-apocalyptic world where a brutal, futuristic gang resembling football is played. Rutger Hauer stars as a disgraced former star leading a ragtag group of juggers, as the players of the game are known, to one of the remaining nine cities on Earth for glory and personal redemption. It co-stars Vincent D'Onofrio, Delroy Lindo, and Joan Chen. The movie is weird, wonderful, and criminally underrated. Fans of Blade Runner should pay homage to David Webb Peoples and see this forgotten movie. And they're right about it. It's really a good movie. Slipstream from 1989 is put on the list here. Rollerball from 1975. Is that really underrated? Is Rollerball underrated? And we're talking about the original, not the remake. The original from 1975 with James Caan.
I feel like Rollerball was pretty rated correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's another one that I don't think is underrated at all. They put Solaris on here.
Which one?
1972. The good one.
Yeah. Well,
the Tarkovsky version.
Is it underrated because people in the West haven't really seen
it? Oh, it's, I don't know. I mean, I just, I consider Solaris one of the greatest science fiction movies ever made.
Yeah, topped by maybe only Stalker in terms of Tarkovsky.
Yeah. Number two is Forbidden Planet. It was underrated when it first came out, but again, this is another movie that now has a great reputation, Forbidden Planet. And that movie, by the way, is featured, that's one of the movies that they're watching on TV in the original Halloween. It's Forbidden Planet and The Thing. Those are the two movies that the kids are watching while they're being babysit. And then finally, we mentioned it earlier, Silent Running with Bruce Dern. It is a great movie. Movies like WALL-E, WALL-E, which is also one of my favorite science fiction movies of all time, and Moon, they pay homage to Silent Running, which is a great movie from the early 70s, which featuring a great, great performance by Bruce Dern. So there you go. Some sci-fi movies. Killer Clowns from Outer Space is epic. 847 area code says 312, the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And then somebody actually put in a vote for AI, Artificial Intelligence, which is a movie that I hate. That I absolutely hate. So,